Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Friday. It's always the best news. We're into the month of November, and things are looking festive. It's already started. Ben wants to talk about this later, but like the three or four things that you love about this time of year and the three or four things that you hate about this time of year. You're not going to have long to make up your mind. The Christmas decorations were up last month already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are done.
As usual. And I mean, I can't complain about that because you should be used to it by now. It's been happening since I was a kid.
Mm. I saw someone knocked on Mariah Carey's door about...
She's risen from her tomb.
But I think she's waking up today.
So Mariah Carey is such a bitch, right? She's
such a diva.
Oh. Remember when she did that New Year's Eve thing and she pitched up and then she went like...
Yes.
And then eventually just like let the band play and let the audience sing. And she kind of just went and sat on the side and watched.
Yeah.
She just doesn't give a shit at all. You got to hear that song, though. It's going to be coming at you whether you like it or not, as well as all the Boney M stuff and all the usuals. And
then it's the mad rush.
Yeah.
And planning. You thought it was over, but you're already planning into June next year for things.
Well, I mean, I love this time of year. It always just goes too quickly for me.
Mm.
I would have double October and November and December if I could, and like squeeze the other, choose any 3 months, any other 3 months, and just take away some of it. I don't mind. Anyway, we'll get to it. It's just around the corner, and before we get to that, I'm a little jealous of Americans because they get that Thanksgiving, which is like almost like a warning sign for Christmas and everything else. We don't have that. We just suddenly you find, and I had three conversations with people who I didn't know at all this week about how this whole country goes on a go slow from not even the middle of December, like the middle of November. Already, I don't know if you've got this emailing people, setting up meetings, and they're like, it's nice of you to try and do that, but we're actually only... Let's meet in January. How about that?
It's always, we meant to do this year, but it's going to have to be pushed to next year.
Yeah. Oh, no, even things that could quite easily be done this year.
No one's got the energy.
Yeah, no one wants to. It's finished. All right, so speaking of things that are coming up, we got a brand new episode of Pearl and Tando's show, Say Less, which, of course, is brought to you by The Real Network. All the drama, all the crazy. And those two talk to some very interesting people. They have Zunaid Motti or something on? Yeah, I heard about that. And then Kate Turkington is also, her show is flying as well, and she's interviewed Judge Edwin Cameron, who's a fascinating and controversial man himself. I mean, he was a judge of the Constitutional Court for a long time. He has very controversial opinions on things, which usually judges don't have. Very outspoken. He's been a massive social activist, and he is an interesting guy. And Kate sat down and spoke to him. So when does that go live?
That goes live next week.
All right. So make sure you don't miss that as well. Those are the public service announcements now. I've got that out of the way. How was your week? Are you exhausted?
Finished? Pretty much.
You ready for that break where you're just going to go slow?
Yeah, I was thinking about it now. I don't know if there's enough time to make it a proper break.
What are you talking about?
You've got to work extra hard so that you can have that break.
Yeah. Well, yes and no, because by January the 5th or 6th, I'm usually ready for getting back into things. Then it's been enough.
Are. Actually, you rush back in sometimes.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And sometimes too quickly, and then I end up...
And then you regret it. Just remember that this year.
Let's see. It's some people have real problems. That's my problem. I'll take it. The reason I ask is because obviously people are booking holidays now. They're planning Christmas parties, end of year functions. If you're a business, there are people who are thinking about presents and all that kind of thing too. But I have planned zero. And I actually am so excited about not having things on the agenda.
Mm.
I'm giddy that I don't have anything in the calendar. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go anywhere expensive or distant because I just don't think that's a good idea. You know, you book a holiday and it's like expensive and you think to yourself, I can't justify that. Mm. Maybe I might have before, but I look at it now and I go, that's a bit cheeky and self-indulgent. I think I'd rather not. So I might do something kind of local, but I'm definitely not going big.
Yeah, last Christmas was a difficult one for us because it was my dad's passing and his birthday on Christmas Day. Mm. No, my dad's not Jesus.
But you get that all the time.
You know, every year. So it was a little bit hard being at home, so we decided there and then that we would go away this time. So we were off to Paternoster.
Oh, nice.
First time for me, actually. I've been
I don't even know where that is, but it sounds good.
Yeah, it's a nice little village, so that'll
be
good.
It's on the coast, right?
Yeah, on the coast.
Yeah, okay. See, I had to check. I didn't even know. All right, also coming up a little bit later in the show this morning, we've got Sibusiso Impi Kotelo, who's that enormous guy who, before the rugby matches, goes on and does his Impi thing. But he's got lots to talk about,
too. Fit on here.
Only just. You'd be surprised. We have to zoom the cameras out and make sure we ensure. Yeah, and I've begged him not to take the lift because
no, not that
obviously
little lift.
He needs the exercise, so the stairs are the only thing, you know. I mean, this guy is like, if you bumped into him and you didn't know who he was and you'd never seen him before, you'd think there's been a terrible mistake.
Like, yeah.
God is over. He's overcooked this one. This guy is just, he is so big and so strong and so fit. And, you know, he goes out on that field. We always used to, like, in the beginning when South Africa and New Zealand had their massive rivalries, when I say in the beginning, for me, the beginning of kind of rugby, I always used to think that guys like, remember Jonah Lomu were like big. And then you watch movies and you think The Rock is big. Well, I mean, like, Sibu could stand on those people and not even notice that he'd stood on them.
My mom's such a sports fan and rugby in particular. And when she first saw him coming on TV, she went, look at the size of that man.
Yeah, he's quite a specimen. So he'll be popping in. We've also got the very talented and also not, he's just completely unafraid, Summer Sambit. You may have seen him. He's been doing a lot of political content for the last, I don't know, probably about a year and a half. And he's certainly getting lots of attention. Very articulate, very well-crafted stuff that makes a huge amount of sense. And obviously, he's not the kind of guy who gives a damn if he upsets people during the process, too, because he's got strong opinions. And he can back them up. So, I mean, what's not to like about that? So, Summer Sambit will be in. Ben is coming in later on with a little bit of sport. We've got Dr. Hanan. So, it is chock-a-block this morning. Nice and busy, the way we like it. All right. So, where do we begin? You know the PI Act, the personal information something or another. They're the ones who are meant to protect your personal information so those people don't call you all the time who are trying to sell you insurance or whatever else it is that they're trying to sell you. Of course, it's bullshit because the PI Act achieves absolutely zero.
And how is it different to the Poppy Act?
No, sorry. The PI Act is a different thing. You're right. I immediately thought Poppy. The PI Act is the... Hang on. Now I've got to actually work this out.
I know the Poppy Act Poppy is the protection Act is the one, of personal information.
Yeah. Now, hang on. I'm looking this up
as
we speak.
But that's got to do with signing up for things.
Sorry. PI Act is the prevention of illegal eviction. Oh, this is the thing I spoke to Joe Emilio about. So the PI Act is the prevention of illegal eviction from and unlawful occupation of land. Aha. Okay, so I remember this. A guy called Joe Emilio, who we've spoken to on this show, and he's just done a documentary on that raceway in the northern suburbs of Cape Town, which was illegally occupied by squatters. Mm. So the PI Act is meant to prevent people from doing that. But, of course, we also have laws in this country which seem to always favor people who illegally occupy land. And it's very hard to get them out. And, I mean, if you're a landlord, for example, and you own a property that is vacant and someone moves in, you have to bear all the costs, go to all the trouble. It can take months, not even months, years, to evict them, and it's absolutely impossible. So PIACT's meant to in some way fix that. And I think it was brought into play, it's only been around for like a year or two now. But whenever I think of PIACT, I immediately confuse it, as you just saw, with the Poppy Act. But I also confuse it with, like, because you see how fat some of the people in Parliament are. And I always think, well, the Pie Act, look.
Is from eating pies.
No, I mean, that's what I'm talking about, right? Is that, and I think John Steenhuisen really likes the Pie Act.
He does like the Pie Act.
That's what I'm thinking.
Don't you remember I had an attorney living in my house?
Yes.
For a long time that I couldn't get out.
And he was an illegal squatter and he was an attorney.
He was a property, not property attorney, eviction attorney.
So he was using the law that he knows so well.
He would pay rent 3 months late, set up his offices in there. Oh, and
how did you eventually get him out? Oh. Did you threaten him?
Yeah.
Did you have to send in some heavies?
No, no sending in of heavies.
Tell you what, if you eventually know Sibu Cotello, I mean.
It took a year to get him out of there. It was ridiculous. He was going to buy the property.
Yeah.
And desperate times, just after COVID, I said to him, you can move in as long as you pay occupational rent, which was exorbitant. I mean, I charged him a lot of money. Yeah. And he thought, he still stayed. Right. He just excuses every month why he's not buying the house yet.
But did he pay you the rent?
Yes, but sometimes late.
But he was fully paid up by the time
he left. Fully paid up by the time he left.
Well, that doesn't end so badly then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to talk to Dr. Hanan later on, and I want your input on this, and we will check in on the comment section in a moment. But we're going to talk to him about something which has become it's the trendy thing for people to talk about right now is like men's mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think men's mental health, I'll talk to Dr. Hanan about this later. Maybe you agree or disagree, but I think it's pretty simple. Men are either happy or they're not busy enough. That's all. We don't need psychologists. We don't need antidepressants.
Okay.
And it would help if you get exercise and regular sex. That's like guys' mental health sorted. Got those things going, enough to do.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of men out there who definitely need help.
No, they just don't have enough to do, or they haven't got enough sex, or they're not exercising.
Okay. We'll see.
I'll take this up with Dr. Hanan. You know, far be it for me to ever say anything about psychology.
Yeah, I mean, he may actually agree with you, because that's kind of his thinking, is if you're not distracted or busy enough, if you're not moving forward, you're going to
he's very practical.
Wallow in it.
Well, we'll get to that. I mean, he's got some ideas also around simple habits that you can take on that will immediately improve things for you. So we'll see. We'll see about that. All right. I noticed that this week, James and Flex have been very quiet, and I can't help thinking that they are plotting something. When they go quiet like that, I start to get worried. But they've been on shoots. They're doing a whole lot of stuff here that isn't even necessarily like real network podcast stuff. You know, it's client things, and they've been going to locations. Where were you guys on Monday with Ben? You were at some bar? Benchwarmers, yeah, because he goes there all the time with Sandile, right? What do they do there? Do they run? Do they drink? Because I know they've got like a running club or something there. They run and drink.
It's dangerous.
That's very dangerous. Speaking of dangerous, yesterday, with all this rain, robots just stop working or don't work properly. And the robot that I cross fairly regularly near my house was like red and green at the same time.
Ooh.
And nobody knew what to do, including me. So you should treat it as a four-way stop, I would assume. But there were people just going like it wasn't. So it was nail-biting. There was a moment where I was like, do I risk it now or should I wait or what do I do? But
no traffic light goes by the rules these days. You can't be a pedestrian and just walk when it's a green pedestrian sign. Because firstly, taxis are using the turning lanes as just go through lanes while the robot's red. And more and more I'm seeing pedestrians on the side of the road, just lying there dead. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, jeez, where is this? Are you thinking? I'm thinking, what, Joburg is rough, but, you know, I don't know if we're ready for the G20 if we've got buddies lying next to the road.
No, we're moving my mom into an apartment, and my aunt, she doesn't drive, but she lives right around the corner. But it's because it's crossing Jan Smuts, we can't have her walking there.
So she has to drive.
She has to get an Uber.
For like a two-minute trip. Oh, you're joking.
Because it's that bad.
Uber even pick you up if you're doing a two-minute trip?
They'll make you wait. Yesterday it happened as well. It was raining, so I got her an Uber. And for a four-minute trip. And they took 11 minutes to arrive.
Yeah, I mean, if I were an Uber, I wouldn't pick up you and your aunt.
Yeah.
Not for, what is it, 5 rand? 10 rand?
Well, it was actually 48 rand.
Shit, all right. There's some profit to be made for your little two-minute drive. Maybe that's the way it works. No, what happened with the Uber motorbike thing?
Yes.
Yeah?
So,
in other words, they'll just give you a lift on the back of their bike.
But that's very similar to GoCheck GoCheck? In Bali, it's all you get on the back of the bike. Sometimes two of you get on the back of a scooter.
It's not far off. I mean, I think there are more Checkers 60-60 bikes now on the roads than there are cars.
Yeah.
They are. If you told me that even 5 years ago, the majority of the vehicles on the roads would be those delivery bikes, I'd say to you, you're smoking something.
And also that 100% of those Checkers delivery bikes would have the same squeaky brakes.
Beep, beep, beep. Yeah.
Everywhere they're pitching out.
Whenever they arrive at anyone in the neighborhood's house, you can hear it.
And they almost drive through your
gate. 100% right. Okay, so Mamdani is the mayor of New York. So there was all kinds of upset all over New York because they've decided, the New Yorkers, that they actually want a socialist, Islamist, Nepo baby. I don't think too much more needs to be said than's already been said about this guy. But he is he's nothing. And he's done nothing in his life. He was a rapper for a little while.
Oh.
Yeah, before he's grown up with two very, very rich parents. His mom made movies. His dad is an academic. He grew up, and I think, in fact, he still lives off of them because he's never had a job. And now he's mayor of New York. So, you know, anything is possible. Don't give up on your dreams, kids. You too could be mayor of New York one day. Now, this guy he's to the left of Bernie Sanders. He's so left. And I really worry for New York. You know how much I love that city? It's my favorite city in the world.
Mayor of New York is like being a president.
It is. It's a big job because it's a very big city and there's a lot to do. Mm. And a mayor of New York can change things within a very short space of time. I mean, look, people are still talking about the era of Rudy Giuliani. When he turned the city around, they talk about Bloomberg. There are a couple of very bad mayors, like de Blasio, who was in there just a while ago. This guy, Eric Adams, who's been in charge now, he's been disappointing, to say the least. And I think New York is going to get a whole lot more of that disappointment from Zoran Mamdani. And I do love the name, Zoran.
Zoran.
It's, sounds like a character from like a superhero movie. But there he is. He's now the mayor of New York. So good luck, New York.
I would not want his to-do list.
No, and I wouldn't want to be receiving his to-do list either. Apparently, he's already asking for money.
Sure.
So, And by the way, what he's going to do, because he wants to give people – here's just a smattering of the stuff that he wants to achieve, right, while he's mayor. So he's already said he wants free buses for everyone in New York. Now, the subway isn't free.
Mm.
But because the tunnels in the subway give you shelter from snow and wind and that kind of thing, it's become like one big homeless shelter. And there are lots of hugely mentally ill people in New York. It seems like a magnet for crazy people. And I mean that with love because, as I said to you, it's one of my favorite cities in the world. But these buses, if they are now going to be for free, then there is no control mechanism at the entrance. And they're going to become roving homeless shelters, as has happened with most of the areas on the subway and the subway trains themselves. I mean, you have people who will attack you on the subway in New York when you've just walked onto a train. You've done absolutely zero. There are a lot of seriously, seriously crazy people there. And the homeless problem, as we've discovered before, is not actually an accommodation problem. It's a social ill. It's a mental disorder as well as a problem which goes in very many directions, and none of them are necessarily to do with rent. That's another thing he wants to do. He wants to freeze rents, which is a great idea, because when you freeze rent, that means no one develops any more property because there's no profit to be made out of rent. Remember, landowners like Leanne, who was explaining her landowner problem just a little bit earlier on, and landlords need to up the rent from time to time because they need to maintain things. Mm. The geyser bursts, the oven breaks, the veranda floods. They have to sort all that stuff out.
Taxes increase, inflation.
Sure. And then they've got constant maintenance to take care of, plumbing, electricity, water, rates and taxes increase, as you said. So if you freeze the rents, what you're essentially doing is you are creating a negative incentive for people to develop and own property. And it creates an artificial depressant on people who are going to be doing that stuff. So essentially what you do then is you throttle the amount of available accommodation. Plus you put people who could never afford places into apartments right next to people who have paid for their places, which creates an economic inequity, which you know leads to problems, because if you rent control an apartment next to someone who's paid, you know, over the course of their life, maybe they're in their 70s and they've been paying since they were 20 for that apartment, and they're in a very different spot to the people who've just moved into a rent controlled apartment, you're going to have problems. That's just how it works. People in a neighborhood usually like to think that the people around them in the neighborhood have more or less the same economic issues that they do.
And, yeah, socioeconomic and
sure,
living standards.
So he wants to do that. Then this is a great idea because it's never been tried before, and it's obviously just ripe for the picking, and it's going to work. He wants to have government-owned grocery stores that either give you free food or very, very cheap food. But we know how well the government runs everything else, so of course they'll run that really well, a shop.
Mm.
Where again, and it seems to me like there are lots of people in the world alive today, particularly, and he got overwhelming numbers of votes from, particularly immigrants.
Mm.
You know, he himself is a second-generation immigrant. He's from Uganda. He was here in Cape Town apparently studying at UCT for a while too, which is not a recommendation. That's actually something that usually would put someone off. Anybody. I mean, if I see a CV on my desk and it's UCT, I usually.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
No, they're perfectly good courses.
Pretty high standards.
No, they're pretty good courses at UCT, and there are probably some good lecturers in some departments.
Like, what's changed at UCT so dramatically?
He wants to have, and all these people who support him obviously want to have, free government grocery stores. Which is great, but you know, you eventually run out of other people's money. And someone has to pay for that stuff. And the people who have the least reason to get it right when running a shop are people who don't have an economic incentive for doing so.
Mm.
Running a shop, I mean, anybody can tell you this. The cafe owner on the corner can say to you, it's really, really tough to manage those margins. But Zoran Mamdani, he knows better. He's going to do this differently. He's got all kinds of other crap ideas as well. So good luck, New York. Apart from immigrants, his other biggest group of supporters were liberal white women who in America just have no idea what they're voting for most of the time, because much of the motivation for them voting for X or for Y is because they want other people in their social circles and other people in their bubble to think they're a good person.
And that they're doing the right thing, the good thing.
That they're compassionate, kind, that they care about immigrants, that they're not xenophobic or racist or sexist or any of those things, which is a great motivation so that you don't not get invited to dinner parties. But it is a terrible reason to vote for somebody. And you women are getting mightily close to me saying we're taking away your vote at this point, because it just seems like a lot of people in this New York mayoral election do not know what the hell they're doing. And they vote on issues based on how they feel, which we've discussed with Dr. Hanan a million times, and because they want other people to think things about them instead of voting for policies.
So what are their husbands voting?
Who the hell knows if their husbands even are voting? And most of these women do not have husbands. They're, with respect, Leanne, I mean no insult by this, but they're single cat ladies. And right. New York and California have high concentrations of blue-haired, unattractive, single white women who are overeducated. You can look it up. Don't blame the messenger.
I'd like to look it up.
Yeah,
do they actually say that?
Yeah.
Blue-haired?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, those – and when, if you mentioned cat ladies, a bunch of them got really upset a while ago because I think it was J.D. Vance, who's now vice president of the United States. He said in an interview once something about cat ladies and was dismissive of them.
Oh, he did too.
And they all got furious.
Yeah, I remember that.
They were like, we are not cat ladies, which is precisely what a cat lady would do. Anyway, Joburg already tried the Anyope Muslim mayor and it failed, says Bitcoin. But yeah, we did, and it was a disaster, and Joburg is still a disaster. I did see they really are trying desperately to make us look good
ahead of,
for the G20.
Yeah.
And I saw Ridit Labi, who she's been very quiet on the South African political front for a while because she's in America. She's been talking more about American politics. And I have zero common ground with Reedy on American politics. But she did say something that I actually posted the other day, which I agreed with. And you know, this is the point of being an adult, is that you can agree and disagree with the same person in a number of ways and still be nice to each other and not have a problem with each other forever. This is how you should, as adults, discuss politics. She said, it's so cosmetic, and everything this government does is performative, which is spot on.
Mm.
They'll tidy up the streets of Joburg. They'll make it look better. They'll fix the verge. They'll cut the lawn. They'll pick up the trash. To impress who? The people that this government and this municipality in Johannesburg should be impressing.
It's us.
You.
Yep.
You should be impressed. You should be the one who they are desperate to curry favor with. Why? Because you actually vote for them. And you are a participant in those elections, which they rely on to get the job. Plus, you're the taxpayer, for God's sake. Mm. You're the one who's actually putting in the money. This is a service you have paid for. You should get it.
It's actually – it infuriated me because I caught myself.
Yeah.
There were – I don't know, you know, picking up papers and cleaning up roadsides. I don't know what that would be called. Road sidewalk maintenance or whatever. Cleaning up. And I thought, oh, that's really amazing to see. I haven't seen that in ages. And then I realized – it's for G20, not for us.
Yeah. No, they don't care about us.
Mm.
Gavin Oosterijk says, Gareth, when are you wearing your MAGA hat to the studio? What's your take on the Dems pretty much dominating this off your elections, which is a good sign of popular opinion? So Gavin is asking about two things there. First of all, I'm not much a hat wearer. I mean, I got a MAGA hat just to piss off people who I know and who disagree with me. I just enjoy like seeing them feel uncomfortable if you wear a certain kind of hat. But I don't wear a hat.
Yeah, I'm not a hat person.
Yeah,
either.
I think I look goofy and stupid in a hat. So that's not going to happen. The second question is much more important. What do I think of the Dems pretty much dominating the off-year elections? Okay, so there have only been three that are noteworthy here, two of which we have the results for. There was Jay Jones, I think his name is. I think that's his name. He stood for, I think, the Attorney General job in Virginia. He's a guy who went out and said that he actually wants to see his Republican opponents dead and mentioned that he wouldn't have a huge problem with their fascist children, in quotations, being shot as well.
Wow.
So a really pleasant chap, and I think he won, which shows you that the message that the Dems are going to take from that is that the more extreme you are, the better. That's what they're all going to be doing in the next couple of months. They're going to be ramping up the rhetoric and talking like that guy. And then there's, of course, Mamdani in New York. There was also Abigail Spamberger in Virginia. I don't know what the result of that election was. So I don't really think it's three elections is a trend that you can take terribly seriously yet. Mm. I'm not sure. So I don't know what it means. But what I will tell you is that it seems to me the Democrats have found what they would like to do already just based on Mamdani. And I think what they want to do is they want to veer to the left. They want to jump straight into...
They want to dress to the left.
Yeah. And again, based on who they attracted here, the Democrats have really two areas of support. Illegal immigrants and people who are not born in the United States, they will continue to vote Democrat. And the other people who will continue to vote Democrat are single white women with
blue-haired
cats.
Blue-haired cat ladies.
Yeah, that's the whole constituency, if you ask me. So I don't know if that's enough to win national elections going forward. We'll have to see. But as Slippery Pickle says here, quoting Borat, you'll let the women vote. What's next? You'll let the dog drive car. Right? So this is something worth remembering. Borat, wiser than he looks. The Muslim model seems to work only in low-density population countries, says Chris. I'm not sure what you're talking about there. Carl DeSantis says, you're describing that stupid puppet Chester Messing. Have you seen how far left he's become? I never thought that guy was funny. What's his actual name?
Conrad Koch.
I never thought he was funny, but he took me on once because I said that there was a woman in a full burqa in like Durban Airport circa 2014.
Mm.
And I said, and it was the middle of December and it was sweltering and this woman was struggling. You could just see she was like hot as fuck under there. And I know you get different kinds of hijabs and burqas and all the rest of it. But I posted something on the internet about, it was in the early days of Twitter. Mm. And I said, oh, I feel sorry for this woman. Anyway, did he climb down my throat about like, oh, you know, you are a cultural supremacist or whatever it was. I mean, for a while, I think that there were people who might have publicly agreed with him during that woke, politically correct phase. But this guy was just, I mean, I had him on my show a couple of times. I had no reason to believe that he was such a miserable sack of shit deep down inside. But clearly that's what he was. And ever since then, I've just been unable to laugh at any of his stuff because I know that the person behind the puppet is a mean-spirited, angry, bitter, resentful person who thinks that they haven't got the best out of life and they deserve more. So whenever I see that puppet, I find myself completely put off.
Mm.
Even if I hadn't had that interaction with him myself, I just never found him funny. So good luck to him. Hey, Ben.
Yeah, hi, guys.
What's happening?
Mm. Oh, good. Hey,
you've joined in a very political morning.
Yeah.
Aren't you excited for New York, the city you just visited for the first time, but it's never going to look
really
as good?
I'm really not, Gareth. We have this conversation all the time. Guys, it doesn't work. Socialism, communism, all that kind of bullshit, it doesn't work. You're a child. Your one isn't going to be the better one. Yeah. Grow up. Just grow up. That's all I can say.
Well, again, if your constituency is all based on illegal immigrants and
the whole no
liberal
voter
white
ID cards.
I mean,
why don't you just say, hi, guys, we're looking to do a dodgy election.
Yeah.
I mean, you need an ID to do so many menial things in life, but apparently to vote.
Apparently it's too much to ask people for an ID.
Well, it's probably racist. They'll
and just last week on this very show, I said that one of the things I think we should do is we should have more restrictions around voting. Not, I don't like the universal franchise. I think that people who are passed out on the embankments next to the highway should not have the same vote as someone who is paying 40% of their salary to the government to distribute and steal as they like for tax.
They'll be called discriminatory, but I think it's discriminatory to think that we offer the same value to society.
Let me tell you something. This word discrimination is a very valuable word. You discriminate when you go on a date. You discriminate when you buy things at the shop.
In that instance, yeah.
You discriminate in your day-to-day existence between decision A and decision B. Discrimination is a very, very powerful tool, and one which, if deployed correctly, can bring you tremendous success or terrible failure. So let's stop pretending that discriminating isn't something that humans do on a daily basis.
Interesting.
What it's become equated to is some kind of discrimination against a person, yes, based on their gender or their race or their
race,
sexuality,
with
or anything
racism, yeah,
which is simplified and stupid, because even within those categories, you have people who are of those categories who are discriminating. You know, just because you're a black woman doesn't mean that you're going to like all other black women. I mean, it's
or
ridiculous.
Think like them.
We all know that that's stupid when we interrogate it for more than 2 seconds. But again, it comes down to this idea that there are a bunch of people in the world who want you to think they're nice people, and therefore their biggest flex, apologies to you, flex, is that they are not discriminating.
Mm.
That somehow, you know, things just happen to them. They don't know why they're voting for somebody. They think they just look nice.
It's that just reminded me of that trend where you can buy the ugly fruit.
Yes.
Because then you're not discriminating.
Yeah, correct.
If you weren't discriminating, you'd walk home with like the worst shit in your shopping basket.
It's these people who go, yeah, correct. I mean, if you didn't discriminate, if you didn't check the Avos, you'd end up with shit Avos every time you got home, right? I heard something this week about like the body positivity movement, which I think has now been snuffed out in the cradle. I hope so. I certainly hope so. Because
Has Ozempic snuffed that out? Because it turns out nobody wants to be
fat. Two things that have, right? So Ozempic is obviously the most valuable one, because suddenly, it turns out that body positivity wasn't a real thing. It was all dishonest and facetious fallacious and nonsense.
As a person on Ozempic for diabetes.
Interesting.
Diabetes.
Have we spoken about this yet?
Yeah. Maybe you were away.
Don't think that the two of you can say that about it.
Okay, I'll tell you why we can.
I think the what's happening now is that there's proof to people who didn't believe that being obese was a disease and was related to hormonal issues. Those people are now bitter and twisted at seeing other people lose weight.
I was bitter and twisted long before Ozempic, okay?
Yes, we know that. We know that.
Let me put it to you this way.
But there's Ozempic has now done, they're just losing weight.
Well, all those people who, because there's now a way to do it that doesn't involve eating less and running more.
I've always said to you, I eat way less.
It's not about you. Don't do what everybody usually does and turn it into a story. This is not a Leanne criticism, and your personal experience is not the truth for the world.
Fine.
I mean, I get it. And I've never attacked you personally about this. We've laughed about it together, but it's never an attack. If the people who believed in the body positivity movement, I never thought you were one of those either. If those people will just admit that now, because of Ozempic, they don't really care. And also the other thing that proved that they were full of shit from the beginning is if you really cared about your fat friend, and you were an empath, and you were compassionate, why didn't you offer to put on 50 kilograms and look like her? Huh? How about that? Where are those people? Because I believe in actions, not words. So if you really have body positivity flowing through your veins, and you're a kind, compassionate person, fucking eat 3 wheelbarrow loads of food and join your fat
body
friend.
Body positivity doesn't mean being fat.
Exactly.
No, it's being positive about your body no matter what size it is.
It's bullshit. But it's just bullshit.
It's a lot of it, though, the reason why I bring up the Ozempic thing is that the people that were such major cheerleaders of that, Ozempic came out and it's like, no, I want to be thin straight away.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, what's body positivity there? Because then you want to be that, but so that's not positive what you were.
Yeah.
It's a bit of hypocrisy that comes out there.
So we're not,
absolutely not touching on your story.
No, so we're not talking about health conditions or the fact that it isn't a great solution for people who've struggled with this.
Yeah, well, for it.
It's horrific.
I've always been all for it.
I mean, however you get there, it is better to be thin. It just is. You're carrying around a lot less. Your blood doesn't have to flow to so many places. You're not struggling to breathe. You sleep better. All those kinds of things happen when you're not overweight. Everybody knows this. And yet there were a group of people who wanted us to believe that they believed you could be beautiful at any size.
It was so toxic for young people who are really impressionable. And you get people like Lizzo come out and say these kind of
even
things.
Even she's on Ozempic, apparently. So it's just horseshit.
Well,
I just don't believe
it. She needs to be. That's the thing, because she – I mean, I don't know what her diet is.
Jesus.
But she moves
five
a lot.
Fridges a night.
But, Leanne, you just said that she needs to be. So, therefore, body positivity is bullshit. That if you've just said she needs to be. So where she was wasn't good. And you've
no, I'm not saying
it.
her size. I'm saying her health.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Same thing.
They're related.
Yeah.
You can't have one without the other.
Yeah,
they're related. So, yes, I think that that's nonsense. All right, let's just move on to something else, because Bitcoin Butch says, for how far people want to be skinny because it's easy to do it. Listen, if you can't do it through eating less and running more, then get on Ozempic. If it helps you, I'm not going to choose to criticize you because – and, I mean, I've joked on the show – that I really want people to who are on Ozempic to have bad side effects, because I've been struggling and suffering to not be fat, and I feel it's very unfair that they now are on this stuff.
The queue, yeah.
But that, I'm kidding. I mean, like, if you can't tell the difference between me being sarcastic and me being serious, then you haven't watched the show for long enough. And I invite you to take a look at the several thousand hours of stuff that's come before this. Carl says, he's reading you. He says, Leanne is not enjoying Gareth's disdain for the bum fatties or the bum batties. Shame fat. Are you?
What's a bum?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I'm confused.
I don't know.
I don't know how to feel.
Lizzo will fucking eat the Ozempic, says Carl as well. So he's busy. He's all over it here. Rebellious Ruth says, I say only taxpayers should be allowed to vote and people need IQ tests before breeding. Again, who's going to administer the IQ tests before you let people breed? The government? That's dangerous.
Let me rather not.
No, go.
But I mean, like, SARS should give you an OTP which you go to the polls with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that. I think if you're a taxpayer, that is the basic qualification, because if you're taking from the state – you don't get to vote.
Yeah, but then it also maybe increase revenue. So maybe it's like, yeah, maybe I should pay tax because I want to vote. I want to stay in society.
Also,
those
I think
type of people don't want to vote.
You were going to say something though before we moved on. About Rebellious Ruth's comment.
Oh no, yeah,
voting
about. I don't think it's an IQ thing, because people have a higher IQ will probably make better decisions about having children and their children's lives if they do decide to have children.
Sometimes, like in the movie Idiocracy, which you may remember, which is now actually a documentary, not a movie, because that's where we're at.
Pretty much.
In the movie Jesus, I just went completely.
Can you smell burnt toast?
I'm having a stroke. In the movie Idiocracy, the opening, you only need to watch the first 10 minutes of the movie to get the basic premise, which is just so spot on. And I know it was a comedy, and it made people laugh when it came out in the 90s, but man, that thing's on the nose. It opens up with this high IQ couple who live in a city. They've got 2 degrees each. They've got a dog. They live in a beautiful apartment. They've got money, but they don't think they have enough. And they wait and they wait and they wait until it's too late to have kids. And then down the road is the high school cheerleader and the football jock, who both come from very ordinary middle-class families. They hardly paid attention at school, but she's hot and he's horny, and they fuck and they make 20 kids. And eventually, the people who have the high IQ and live in the apartment and are terribly smart people, they have no kids and they both die and the cats eat them. And then the people who've had the 20 kids, those are the people whose kids take over the next generation.
Yeah.
So on. So it's a bit ugly depending on which side of that argument you're on, but it's kind of where we're at. There are a couple of other things here that are worth reflecting on. So Slippery Pickle says, you have to pass that puzzle with putting different shapes through holes before you're allowed inside the poles. Now, that would, I don't know if that's IQ, but you shouldn't be a complete gonk when you go to the poll. I mean, I did notice last time I went to vote, I looked at some of those people. There were people, just if you look at the state of their feet, for example, and they're wearing open shoes. And I think these people should not be allowed out of the house, let alone to vote. But it's not up to me. All I'm suggesting is that there needs to be, and it doesn't need to be anything that's tied to your...
You said like maybe 5 to 10 questions.
Yeah, I mean like a simple quiz. And as Ben says,
older,
then SARS sends the... Of course, yeah. Like make it... And by the way, that's another thing that they're talking about now. They're talking about it very seriously. There are people in America who are saying, Kamala Harris, remember her? She was the chick who ran against Trump in the last election and everyone hated. Kamala the drunk Harris, she said, we should put the voting age to 16. 16? Have you met the average 16-year-old?
Yeah.
I mean, I know what I was like at 16. There is no way you should put
no concept of life and economics
anything into the hands of a 16-year-old you don't want fucked up. Hanan. I thought you said a nun is on. I was going to say, wow, we've got a nun?
A nun
just called in. Yeah, no, it's Hanan. There he is. Dr. Hanan Bushkin. How the hell are you?
How are you guys?
Were you laughing at what I was saying about 16-year-olds?
No, it's 100% true. I mean, I know many 21-year-olds that shouldn't vote. So at 16, think about what your intentions are and your goals are at 16. I mean, if you know, we all just want to party it up and, you know, go out and have fun. And it's all about immediate gratification. You can't vote long term for immediate gratification. It just doesn't work.
All right. So speaking of immediate gratification, I had a brief conversation with Leanne about what I wanted to talk to you about today. And she thinks you might actually like what I have to say, even though I'm pretty much convinced what I'm saying is not going to appeal to you at all. I don't know. Leanne seems to think we're on the same team here. Let's just talk about men's mental health because it's so trendy at the moment and everybody's talking about it. But Dr. Hanan, I'm going to posit my theory and you can criticize it as much as you like. I'm not going to get hurt feelings. If men are unhappy or depressed or miserable or unstimulated or whatever, they need to do three things. They need to exercise, they need to get more sex, and they need to do stuff. And that's how I think you cure the men's mental health problem. The last thing they should do is sit down and have fucking talk therapy for hours. What do you think?
So I've said this many, many times, and it does sound controversial, but it is true. 99% of mental ill health is when you sit, think, and feel stuck.
Yeah.
Right. See, the moment your attention is external.
She quoted you before. Yeah.
That's great. There's a big difference in theory and practice because they say knowledge is power, but knowledge is potential power. It's what you do with that knowledge that makes a difference. So knowing what you should be doing, knowing that exercise is very good for you, and knowing that social connections is very good for you, and eating really well is really good for you, and sleep is very good for you. That's common knowledge, and most people know that. But the execution of it, that's very difficult. So whilst you are right, it's all about the external chasing of a goal that makes people feel fulfilled and alive and a sense of purpose and avoids you getting mental ill health, anxiety, depression, frustration, insecurity, et cetera, et cetera. The implementation of it, that's where the magic source is. And therapy, the right kind of therapy, will allow you to marry theory and practice. So it's not about sitting with your favorite therapist and talking about how it makes you feel, but rather how do I implement what I know into real life? That's the real magic.
Okay, so you kind of half agree with me, but the other half of what I'm saying is bullshit to you.
No, I think it is important to chase forward. I think sleep is important. Sex is important. Diet is important. Exercise is important. Social connections, all the anchors. You remember all the anchors, the 15 of them? I dare you to repeat it back to me.
No, that's not what I won't remember.
So those are very, very important. So it's career, financial security, family, friends, romantic, diet, exercise, sleep, and your medical health. Those are the 9 core anchors. They are very important for mental health, but the implementation of it is very important. Now, there's a formula to implementing it, but yes, you should go to therapy to figure out not just what you should do, but how you should do it. In other words, how do you implement the theory into practice?
About taking the blueprint and making it and converting it into something that works.
An action plan action. And doing it.
Yeah. That is so good. That is so good. Oh, my God, that is great.
She listens. She listens. She's not like me who can't remember the 15 fucking things.
That's excellent because it is about the blueprint.
There does seem to be an inordinate just smorgasbord tsunami of like stuff on men's mental health, like it's a separate category. Do you think that there is a difference between the way that men should approach mental health and the way that women should? Or is that also just one of those things that's been made up by marketers?
So I think we do approach mental health differently. I don't think we should approach mental health differently, but I think we do. So women are much more focused and socialized into how do you feel in relationships? And men are socialized into, well, how do you fix and what do you do? That's why there's have you ever seen the ad with a couple having a conversation and the woman with a nail in the head? Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, I'll send it to you. You should share it on the show. It's the most brilliant ad. I won't give it away, but it just highlights the difference between men and how men and women deal with issues together. Women want to talk about generally, I want you to recognize how I feel. I want you to acknowledge how I feel. And men are all about, well, let me fix it. What do we need fixing? Let me see what's broken. Let me see the fire that I need to put out. So we approach mental health very differently. We won't want to go in naturally internally and acknowledge what I feel and fix what I feel. And men are external. Well, let me screw this on. Let me tighten this. Let me close this. Let me open that. Let me fix what's broken. I'm much more of a fan of externalizing the issue because generally the issue is with something that's not being fulfilled externally, again, with purpose or financial security or relationships. So the moment you get into the habit of recognizing what's broken and going out of your way to figure out how to fix it, you'll generally do well.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of people who are still talking about this, even though I think we've gone past the station. Getting men to speak openly about stress and fatigue and their happiness and all of that stuff. I think we've actually gone too far in the opposite direction, in that direction rather. Now, I just don't want to hear it. Like I meet people and I don't know them from a hole in the ground and they start telling me about their challenges in life and I'm like, just shut the fuck up. I don't even know you. They're talking too much. These guys are like sharing too. Who wants to know? Nobody wants to hear that. And I mean, it's fine if you're with your therapist, but it's become like everybody thinks they're on the sofa in a television show and that they must share their, oh, you know, and my aunt slapped me when I was 4 and I've never got over it. And my mom didn't say well done after I got the fucking book prize and standard 2. And who wants to hear this? Honestly, shut up.
But the reality is that in therapy, it's not effective either. So, I mean, I've said this on the show many times. I spend 1% of my time discussing the problem with my patients and 99% of the time resolving those things that are causing them distress. So it's all about really moving forward in the resolution. There's really nobody can tell me that there is any value in rehashing and unpacking and repacking and packaging it differently in order to get healthy. Now, see, here's something interesting. I mean, I've said this on many occasions. Telling the story of your life is completely, it's a made up narrative. Interestingly, trauma is not about what happened. Trauma is actually the way you tell yourself the story about what happened because nobody owns the truth. The truth is actually just your perception. Your perception is completely kind of your own made up, you know, subjective narrative of that moment. That's why. Completely. It said it depends on the cup of coffee that you drank this morning and the good phone call that you had and the weather's too hot, too cold. the way you tell the story is really the trauma. So yeah. People say, well, Hanan, how do you then, if you're moving forward and don't look retrospectively in the past, how do you then fix the past? Here's the cool magic trick. By moving forward and creating a new reality for you, you ultimately change the past. It's actually very, very cool. Think about it. And this is something that I'm very proud of. And I'll give you an analogy. If I, for example, let's just say at age 6, I get bitten by a dog, and at age 8, I get bitten by a dog, and at age 10, I get bitten by a dog. My view is now suddenly
that dog.
Exactly. So my belief will be dogs are very dangerous. I must avoid dogs. Now, 30 years later, I can either go back and refish and reenact those moments, and I don't know, maybe even get stuck there, or I can create new experiences for me today. So I can play with dogs and play with dogs and play with dogs. And after 1,000 experiences with 1,000 dogs, I'm going to see dogs as safe and wonderful and great. Yeah. The moment I see dogs as safe and wonderful and great, suddenly I look back at my past and I've reframed my past. I no longer see it as, I can't believe this happened, but rather I see it as very differently. Maybe it was my fault. Maybe I antagonized the dog. I actually changed the past by creating different experiences today. How's that for a magic trick?
No, I don't have to go beautiful. There. Yeah, you see, this is why people pay you the big money, because you say these breakthrough things. I do want to turn to our own case of men's mental health in front of us here, and that's Ben. Anything to add?
No, my mental health's pretty solid, actually. And
well, do you have anything to say about this, or do you also agree with me that it's overwrought?
Completely. The solution is what takes you forward. The solution is what gives you joy.
Yeah,
the stuff behind you will just give you more of what you had behind you. Sadness.
Yeah. There we go.
So do you choose actively choose things that spark joy for you, Ben?
Absolutely, Leanne. My entire life is based around that, eliciting joy within. Otherwise, I'm going to be a grumpy cunt around anyone else.
Oh, wow.
So you've got to think, how do you package yourself to be the best person for someone else? Because nobody wants someone who's
you actually were a grumpy cunt for quite a while.
Because I didn't know what I'm just saying. This is the thing. This is an evolution for me. Because I didn't focus on that. But now it's so simple.
Oh, you see, Dr. Hanan, anything to comment on what Ben said?
It's actually, you're quite right, Ben. It's actually not complicated. It's hard, but not complicated. It's much easier to stay stuck within your comfort zone and refresh these feelings and almost press refresh all the time on how do I feel and why do I feel this way, because it doesn't require me to take risk and step out of my comfort zone. So it's much easier to stay stuck, but it's harder to step out of the comfort zone. It's not that hard to understand, but it's certainly hard to do. And if you can exercise the muscle of stepping out of comfort zones and reaching your goals, chasing what you are proud of, chasing what gives you purpose, that's happiness. That's purpose.
Yeah, and that's actual happiness, not the material stuff. It's like those things.
And stay out of people's way. That's a big one for me. Just stay the fuck out of my way. Just don't stop your car with the hazards on the off-ramp to the highway, in the road. Just stay out of people's way. That's a way to be happy too. Okay? And in the aisle of the shop, don't park your trolley across and block everyone else. Just don't get in the way. Is that too much to ask? I think I got an issue with this.
Nah.
All right, Dr. Hanan, thank you. I want us, if you've got a moment to check out the Charlie Sheen documentary, I'd love to have your take on him. Because in some ways,
I will have a look at that. I saw that.
While you were talking about the rewriting your past and kind of re-engineering what you've been through, this guy is a fascinating case study. I know he's not everybody. I know he has tiger's blood or very bizarre genetics, and he survived more than most people should. But I do find his story quite inspiring, and maybe we must talk about that. So I'd love to have your take on it, if you haven't seen it already, next week.
Great. I will have a look at it. I'm going to send you that relationship clip. Share it with the audience. It is brilliant.
I will do. Thank you. Dr. Hanan, it's always a pleasure. We will see you in a week's time. There he is. South Africa's greatest psychologist by far.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because he simplifies things.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. It's practical stuff. It's not difficult. It's not complex.
So, have you two assholes seen the? have you seen the Charlie Sheen documentary?
No, it's on my watch list.
I gotta watch it too. It just feels like
I saw it and I thought, oh, is this gonna be hard work, you know, like hard work to watch?
Would no, I think, watch it'll, something I think easy? It's going to be so much fun. I've heard three different interviews that he's done on various podcasts since the documentary came out, and the book, by the way, which he's written. And I'm fascinated by this guy as a human being. I always have been. You know, we've always talked about him on the show.
He
was this wild child.
But that's how I remember him. Has he changed since?
He is so sensible.
Okay.
And because he's been through more shit than most humans will ever go through, I think he's just an interesting, for some, cautionary tale. For others, inspiring story. And for others, too, terrifying.
Yeah.
He's really something else.
But he is where he is now. He's not the guy who's going on about his past.
You'd
like, oh, I wish I'd done this. Or
but damn it, would I rather hear the Charlie Sheen story or, you know, James's – how was your weekend? Who cares?
James was a Charlie Sheen. He went to Bloemfontein to meet his in-laws.
Holy shit. Wait. Hold – just
come here and just throw James asunder.
Okay, so you went to meet the girlfriend's parents in Bloemfontein. Tell me more. I take it back. Charlie Sheen has fuck all in James. Let's go. James, tell me more. Nice people? No, I didn't say talk about Bloemfontein.
It's
nice
the cheapest place to live in South Africa, by the way.
Oh, what's going on, James? Do you not know how to use the equipment? I'm asking you about the in-laws, you know. Okay.
Down to earth. They're really nice people.
All right, on to Bloemfontein, though. That went nowhere. You say it's the cheapest place in South Africa to live?
Yeah, well, according to a TikTok that I saw of the guy who had, I don't know where his research comes from.
From TikTok?
He named, I think, the five cheapest places to live in South Africa. Some of them were like Kimberley and places that you wouldn't want to live.
Hell no.
Oh, and Bloemfontein is better than Kimberley.
Yes, I think
by
so.
A ball hair.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing so. We know about Bloemfontein, and again, I have no nasty things to say about Bloemfontein. I have no issue with Bloemfontein myself. I've always had a very nice time there. I've got friends who live there.
Yeah.
And Free State people are awesome, okay? But Bloemfontein has, according to all the things I've read over the last 10 to 15 years, it's got like a couple of claims to fame. Very flat. It's super cold in the winter. It's got more takeaway places than anything else. And now you're adding to that it's one of the cheaper places to live in South Africa.
Yeah.
Do you get more bang for your buck?
Yes, Okay. Absolutely.
All right, well, that's good, Bloom. You know.
Well, now that's been said, anyone looking to live more cheaply is going to move to Bloom, and that's going to change
things. It's
going
to push up the cost of living. I like Bloemfontein to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
I went there once to play a golf course on the way down to Cape Town. It was great. I had an awesome day.
Okay. Ben judges all cities by their golf course.
If you haven't got a golf course, it means that nobody wanted to be there from the start.
That's true.
It's quite simple. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, if a town or a city or a suburb even doesn't have a golf course, it's usually shitty.
So on Friday, this last Friday, I played at Parkview, which is one of my favorite places anywhere, not just Joburg. And this mate of mine organizes a talk afterwards. So this guy wrote the book about Parkview.
Oh, yeah?
So you wrote this book from 1916 to 2013, like what happened there? It was one of the coolest things. Like after golf, you've had a couple of rumbers and a few drinks, but we were all captivated by this guy's speech. It was so cool. And how that area developed. And basically, you'll get these, again, we go back to these retards nowadays, if they're like, you know, golf, it's elitist, use the land for like, you know, housing, all that kind of crap. Most golf courses are built where people couldn't live.
So like park, on rivers.
Around rivers,
Sure. So Parkview was actually a flay. Yes. And they drained the flay, and then they put this thing in, and then it flooded all the time. Eventually, by the 50s and 60s, they built the canal we see today. But you can't live there. But what a beautiful thing to do for a suburb to have this golf course, which is a pillar of the community. Mm-hmm. It's real beauty. Like, it's beautiful to walk around there.
And you need the green spaces, as we know, cities all over the world. If you don't have the green spaces that are providing the oxygen, giving you access to green things because your general mood is improved by
basically all the things that you'd never hear coming out of Trump's mouth.
No, he's very much into green space.
Very into green. Very into green.
That had By the way, a lot of oxygen.
You know what he did say this week, which is hilarious?
South Africa shouldn't be in the G's?
Yeah. We shouldn't be in the G's. So, I mean, either you can get upset by this, which would mean that you're an emotional kind of person and you probably shouldn't be giving political opinions, but Donald Trump has said South Africa should not be part of the G20, claiming the country is in decline and citing discredited allegations of discrimination against white South Africans. Well, depends who you talk to, if it's discredited
or not.
Well,
I mean, I think we can all agree on the decline. You go onto Twitter,
people
moan about all the time. Yes. Donald Trump says it, he's a bad guy. It's like, guys, you spend your entire life moaning about the decline, the potholes, the corruption, all these things. And then he just goes, I agree with all you guys in decline, but he's the bad guy.
Well, because it's easy to hate dad when dad's the disciplinarian, when dad is the one handing out smacks. But this is, comes from people who've never had good relationships with their families. I'm almost willing to bet that every day of the week and twice on Sundays. But Donald Trump saying this has upset tons of people. President Cyril Ramaphosa's office remains confident in hosting this month's G20 in Johannesburg, which Trump will skip, and he's sending J.D. Vance instead. By the way, J.D. Vance had the best Halloween costume. There is a meme of him where he's very fat and he's got long hair. And it turns like this and says, remember to say thank you. And he dressed up as the meme, his own meme. So the guy can take the piss out of himself, which That's I always funny. Love. So that was funny.
Well, it shows intelligence, the confidence.
Yes. Can we talk about Prince Andrew before we get to sport?
Ooh.
So
it's finally happened.
Prince Andrew, Duke of York, known formerly by that name, is now Andrew Mountbatten Windsor of Six Railway Cuttings, Bermondsey.
Yes.
Okay. I love the official release. He's like, he'll now be known as. Hang on a second. He's always been known as Andrew the Nonce.
Well, okay? Randy
Don't
Andy.
Don't come here with your
pedo Andy.
Sure, pedo whatever. Andy. Yeah, sure. He's known as that. Don't get ahead of yourself and throw the Mountbatten Windsor. He's a nonce. People will always know him as the pedo. They might as well have the release going, unfortunately, Andrew will go back to his street name, which is Pedo Andrew. That's what they really should have done, if they were honest.
Oh, shame. Yeah, you know, from being the Queen's favorite child, they always told us to. And by the way, the other one who loses out big time here is Fergie, because she was shacking up with him. She saw some free rent.
She bet on the wrong horse there.
So Fergie moved into Royal Lodge in Windsor with Andrew because she was like...
What, recently?
No, like a couple of years ago. Because she was the only person who was supporting him through all of this, by the way. By supporting him, I mean that she didn't believe the allegations. She said it was very unfair. Wow. Poor Andrew. So she pulled in and she was like, oh, don't worry, Andrew. I'm here to support you. Can I have a free room? And he said, well, I've got the free house, so yeah, you could have a free room. And the two of them shacked up together. They've been like the odd couple.
Shame, old
despite being divorced. They've got the girls together, and they obviously are, you know, both very involved with the girls who have both been married subsequently and I think have kids. But Andrew,
I really
and
hope those girls can have normality somewhere.
Well, I hope they I really do. I hope they do, because it's not their fault that their mum and dad are so, so screwed up.
Andrew the Nonce and Pumpkin Spice. So it's just,
and Pumpkin Spice,
really
not nice. So between the two of them, they've been wandering around Royal Lodge, which is, by the way, a huge big fucking house. It's where the Queen Mother used to wake up at like 9 and start drinking gin and Dubonnet and then stumble around in a nightgown or who knows what the Queen Mother did. She lived to 100, didn't she, or pretty close. And drank from early with Margaret, sometimes in attendance too. The two of them would spur each other on. How many you had? Oh, about 15. It's only 9 o'clock, Mum. Come on, up your game. Anyway, Andrew and Fergie have been in there now for a while. They're going to have to move.
Mm-hmm.
They're kicking them out of the house. They're taking away the titles. I mean, before you know it, they're going to be cozying up to sheiks and...
Whoever, of course, they will.
Whoever the next Epstein is. Andy and Fergie. I don't think anyone ever called them the Duke and Duchess of York in conversation.
No, well, in events you will. You have to. It's protocol.
Not anymore.
Well, obviously not anymore.
Apparently, Charles has also removed him from the royal family website. which, I mean, that's stinging. That's cutting.
So do you think they're doing this to
everyone
kind of...
who, because I know you guys are regular visitors to the royal family.
It's on the desktop, yeah. They're bookmarked. But do you reckon they're doing this to get ahead of the scandal, or it's like, we've always known you're a nod, so we're just tired of it now?
There are two things about this. First of all, there may be more. There may be worse things on the way. I think that most of the embarrassment here isn't necessarily, and you could choose to believe Victoria Jaffray or whatever her name is, the girl who ended up dying in Australia, who was Andrew's main accuser. Whether you believe her or not, it's up to you.
But they were photographed together, right?
Yeah, I think.
Although,
Andrew,
as he said, it was a photograph of a photograph of a photograph.
Of a photograph.
While he was sweating and telling us he doesn't sweat.
Yes.
Visiting pizza places late at night. I think that Andrew and Fergie are not... I don't know that Andrew is an actual pedo sex offender. I mean, it's part of the salaciousness of the story.
Yeah.
What I think he and Fergie have done from the get-go is they seem to be very hungry for money. And the two of them seem never to have enough of the wonga. So... Epstein got a lot of his clients by offering them easy finance as well. And I think largely when you're a prince who's used to a certain kind of lifestyle and the woman you marry gets used to that lifestyle too, it's extremely expensive and costly and you need to find funds for that. And sometimes it's hard unless you're pawning, like Meghan is, jams and appearances on TV shows and whatever else. She'll flog any shit, that Meghan Markle. But unless you're her, it's difficult to sell things and enter the economy in a meaningful way. And I think the main thing for Fergie and for Andrew was money. I don't think it was necessarily the dirty sex shit that you hear about that you kind of assume must have been part of it at some point. And certainly was for people like Bill Clinton and many others. But there's that. And then there's the other fact that no Americans yet have been outed as being on the Epstein list. It's all British people. It's Ghislaine Maxwell. It's Prince Andrew. And there are a few others that have been mentioned that are British. And it's almost like the Americans are kind of just batting this one back to Britain so that they don't have to face the music themselves. There are a lot of very powerful, rich people in America who would prefer that the attention stays on Prince Andrew.
Yeah, I guess Andrew is a bit of a easy target because he's like trust fund kid, right? He's just going to ask someone to help him, but he can't help himself. So he's easy.
And he really needs money.
He does.
Did I mention that he needs money?
He needs a place to live and money.
I reckon anybody, you know... It's going to get worse now, obviously, because he needs a place to live. Mm. So it's going to add to the expenses. I reckon Andy's going to be panhandling everywhere. He's going to be like, do you know where I could get, you know, a free bottle of whiskey? And he'll be taking freebies left, right, and center. So if you want to be close to the royal family, now's your time. You know, just offer and phone up while they're still in Royal Lodge and they're taking out the furniture and everything. Ugh. Phone up and go, how's it? I got 10 grand lying around. Do you want it? He'll be on the phone like that.
Yeah, our Facebook Marketplace in their geotagged area will be quite interesting right now. Yeah. Think of some great art.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Plenty of old masters, stuff that Charles doesn't know is in the catalogue.
The place will have a very minimalistic look.
The silverware.
Yeah, the silverware. There'll be a bunch of stuff with Andy and Fergie monograms for sale soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
There's such a big audience in the studio today.
We got so many people here.
So many people.
I know. We'll get to all of that in a moment. Let's get to sport.
Yeah.
This is very important.
Yeah. So, look, the biggest thing, I think, for quite some time, and this week I think people have been quite low-key about it.
You're right there, Leanne.
But, I mean, Leanne's getting all choked up because it is Sir Khaleesi's 100th test match for the Boca this weekend. So... the thing about rugby is that we need rugby because our politicians are such dipshits. We've got all the – we shouldn't be in the G's. That's the reality hanging over our head. But then it all comes together magically on Saturday as the Springboks run out. I mean, it's just a beautiful thing, right? So 1995 has been embedded in our psyche and our identity, that magical moment of Francois Pienaar and Nelson Mandela both wearing the number 6 jersey. And in that time, in that moment, in where the country was, it was just magical. They then made the Invictus movie where Matt Damon won the World Cup again, somehow, even though he was the shortest man of the team. But it was a beautiful, beautiful time because it had rugby significance, societal significance, and it was just huge for the country. But then if you fast forward 30 years, and I hate the whole thing about people playing on poverty stories, and it's like, oh, rags to riches, and oh, it was the unforeseen thing. But just fast forward 30 years, there's another South African in a number 6 jersey who's gone on to win 2 World Cups.
Yep.
He is now going to be representing his country for the 100th time. He is an iconic captain. He has gone through so much as a player, and I would like to focus just on him as a player because everyone's got personal opinions about people. But the knee injuries, the setbacks, the different sort of clubs, having the weight of so much expectation, because that's what they have, right? Mm-hmm. Every South African pins their hopes and dreams on the Bokker on Saturday. You must fix their love life. You must fix their shitty physiques and health. And you must probably fix the careers that they hate, and that's why they drink so heavily. It's a lot of pressure.
It's true, all of that. And all of the things you said now.
And
true.
If you're the Bok captain, you have that on your shoulders as you walk out there. And that oak runs out with the pride of a nation beaming through him.
Oh,
and
wow.
The success has come
Jesus,
from ben, the back of this
inspired.
Guy.
Jesus, Ben, you got me inspired.
But the success has come on the back of this guy. And we get to celebrate this now on Saturday.
Yeah.
It's just such theater. It really is. We are the undisputed greatest rugby team in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when you think rugby, South Africa is the greatest. No one's better than us.
That's true.
And this guy is at the absolute core. He's the absolute catalyst for all these amazing things that other players can be great because of him. This is how team sport works. You can get the most amazing players. But if there isn't that sort of thread that brings it all together, the guy looks everyone in the eyes and says, today we're going to fuck these oaks up and we're going to be the best. And Siya Kolisi's been that. You know, in 2013, he made his debut. It was 21. He turned 22 the next day. And he ran on in a team where the coach didn't really back him. The coach was Heineke Meyer, and this isn't a slight on him because I think Heineke Meyer not backing Siya Kolisi early on maybe is what propelled him to be the amazing guy that he is. But against Scotland and Mbombela, a cold winter's night, Onu Bota gets tragically injured 5 minutes in. This guy at 21 comes on, 5 minutes on, right? He wasn't picking the team replacement. He gets the man of the match on that day.
Hmm.
There was like a certain destiny about this guy, him coming onto the scene. For the rest of that year, he only played as a substitute. In 2015, he had to suffer the loss of Japan, one of 3 current Boks that have had that. And from there on, he just struggled. He was in Alistair Coetzee's era where we got decked by the All Blacks. Back-to-back games, taking 50. And the All Blacks targeted him because they knew he was an inspirational player. And they thought if they can take this oak out, then the team's going to be flat. And through all of that, when Rassie came to salvage the ship, Rassie's amazing. Rassie is incredible. But a lot of the success is because he had Siya Kolisi to make the captain.
Right.
And it's a beautiful thing that's all coming together. Like I say, 100 tests is very difficult to get to. There's been 8 Springboks in the history of the world.
Hmm.
8 South Africa, only 8 that have made 100 tests. It is a testament to longevity, professionalism, a certain fire in that you cannot replicate.
And I got to tell you, everybody loves this guy. You will struggle to find a South African who doesn't love him.
What he does for rugby, it's what he represents. And people will always give the lip service about transformation and all these other things that we've fought with online and had difficulty with articulating, or people were shit stirring around. This accepts in the field, everyone's quiet. Everyone is just focused on one thing. And again, like we're in the time of the G20 and all the other horseshit that politicians get about and pay lip service to. This Oak's story and what he can do for a country within sport is incredible. So it's not just a rugby game this weekend.
I love that. Good Lord. I need swelling, passionate,
goodness
inspiring
me.
Music
ready
after.
I'm to get my flip-flops right.
Guys, it's not a game.
Leanne was always, she almost took off of the fucking sofa there.
And we're great, playing. Ben. We're playing a French
that's
team.
That's just the Ozempic farts.
Yeah, that's it. And we're playing a French team who are still majorly butthurt about the fact that we beat them in 2023 at home in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Again, like I said, this is pure theater. It's going to be at 10 o'clock, so you get your drink on all day. But it's just, it's a beautiful thing to understand. Like, these guys commit so much to become rugby players. I know they get lots of money. I know they get all these things that are given to them, but it's still a major sacrifice. And what this guy sacrificed, whether he knew it at the time or not, it's created something amazing. It really is.
Good for him. I love
that. So that will be 10 o'clock this week, this Saturday. It's a huge game. We are the best team. France are the Six Nations champions. France have got some injuries. Antoine Dupont, he is not in the mix. He's still recovering from that tragic knee injury he suffered in the Six Nations. But yeah, they've got a big, burly bunch of guys. They're probably going to be a heavier team than the Box, which is quite something. We've got guys in the 130, 140, 150 kilogram. So they want to keep it up front, physical.
Can you imagine how many frog's legs you've got to eat to get to that weight?
All of them, man. I mean, it's massive proportions, Leanne. Very, very astute insight there. So guys, this is the test match of the year outside of the one that we had against the All Blacks in Park. The hype, the anticipation. Rusty Erasmus, as always, is just, I think he's done all the right things going into this. And yeah. I think we're gonna beat the French. We're gonna beat the French. So much fired up for this. It's a great game.
Are you going to, as Leanne said, have your Brightongs in hand? I mean, the rain is a little bit of a dampener for some people.
No.
But what do you do if you can't bry? And do you dress up every weekend for the rugby? Like, well, we need a ritual.
Will bry come rain or shine. You'll put that thing under a pandoki and
One of those garden umbrellas.
Put on your winter Springbok jersey.
If there's enough shelter and oxygen, a fire will be made.
Yeah.
Oh, but look, unfortunately, the French, because they're too busy with their third wives and having long lunches and naps, they play far too late into the night. I mean, 10 o'clock, guys, come on. We've got lives here. Yeah, 10 o'clock's an awkward time because you often get into the game a little bit too juiced up, you know, because you've been drinking since like 6. Well, actually, look, this is a great time of year. We've been going through it already. Actually, today on the Bounce Show, we got a feature. Ex-Springbok of 36 caps and friend of the show, Flip van der Merwe.
Yes.
And I had a sit-down this week.
That's why you were at Benchwarmers
on Monday.
Yeah.
We had a sit-down this week. So today on The Real Network, you can actually enjoy this little chat I have with Flip. And we go through all the big test matches because there's 4 in a row now. We've got France. We've got Italy, we've got Ireland, we've got Wales, and Flip and I go through this entire sort of thing for you. So that'll be out today on The Real Network, a nice little bonus sports feature, because it's a great time. So yeah, Ireland will take on Japan early in the day, Scotland and New Zealand, it'll be earlier as well, that'll be the 5 o'clock game. Then England versus Fiji at 20-8, Italy versus Australia at the same time. South American fans, Colombia versus Mexico, big game there, 9 o'clock. But yeah, the big one, it is 10 past 10, all eyes, Stade de France. Sio Khaleesi's 100th test. A great Bok moment. Mm. And then Sunday, Wales will host Argentina. Look, but not
there it is. So Rebellious Ruth says, I've been through a lot of introspection, and this Andrew story is something on her mind. I know what my liver looks like. However, I realized I went to primary school where 2 adults were in charge of kids and they were serious pedophiles. So Ruth had pedophiles in charge of
my nursery school teacher was arrested, pedo. Yes, when I was an adult.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and I have some dodgy memories there.
Guys, can we keep it pure for like 5 fucking minutes here, please?
Yeah, all right, we get back to the sport in a second.
You're throwing pedos back at us.
Well, I mean, again, the question here is from Bitcoin Butt is like, does Andrew list his address at 6 Railway Cutting Bermondsey so that the kids know where to go?
Well, especially leading up to Halloween, yeah.
All right, now let's get back to the sport.
Yeah, guys, so as much as rugby's a be-all and end-all this week, obviously, but the Premier League is looking great. After 10 games, Arsenal are striding ahead. James's team bounced back by beating Real Madrid this week, but we all know Real Madrid aren't what they used to be.
No, sure. By the way, he's having a meltdown in the little production.
But
booth.
I tell you, he's also having a meltdown is a bit is the Spurs fans, because at home they've just been absolute dog shit. They've done okay away. They've won some games, but at home they've been terrible. And there's no better game to play at home right now against Man United. So Man United will go there, so it's going to be a big game. They still think they're on the up. They're not. But yeah, Spurs, Man United kicks off Saturday, 2:30. Really, really great game to be excited about. And then 7:30, Sunderland, who started so well, so incredibly well. They are a bit like the imposter in the top 6 at the moment because they were relegated. They were in the other division and they came up. So this is the first time back in the Premier League for some time. They're doing super well, but they're about to play Arsenal, which is going to obviously not go well for them. 7:30. Arsenal don't concede not goals. Well. They don't concede goals. And then the big game this weekend outside of Arsenal, of course, is Man City versus Liverpool, Sunday at 6:30. Man City are a good team. Liverpool still aren't finding the shape that they want, but they've had that win against Real Madrid. So again, it's so poised for good content. Just good content throughout, good banter, wonderful weekend. And then the Proteas are playing tomorrow. They're still in Pakistan. Shame, poor them. But they're playing cricket, which is what they love, so I guess they're getting through it. And the ODI series is all tied up, so the big decider tomorrow. Tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, I got into the Women's World Cup. I was quite impressed. I even watched a little bit of the final.
Yeah, a bit of a sad end, though. But it's a big moment.
It's such an achievement.
It's a big moment, and incrementally, this team is just getting better and more comfortable at being good, at being showstoppers. But yeah, credit to India. I mean, they were pretty shit during the group stages. They absolutely backdoored their way into that semi-final, and then they beat Australia, and they beat us.
So you were talking about the Premier League just a moment ago, and I know we've touched on this once before, but... My brother told me last weekend about I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles in West Ham. And this is their song. You know, like every team has a song. And it's so fucking depressing. They've got this song.
Is it supposed to uplift everyone?
No, they run out. Everyone blows bubbles and the players come out. There's bubbles all around.
But it's not inspiring or like happy. It's very sad. It's very, very sad.
So if you watch the movie Green Street Hooligans with Frodo, it's about West Ham. And they blow bubbles and they sing the song.
And their dreams just pop like the bubbles.
I mean, West Ham is shit. I mean, West Ham are in relegation zone this year. They might not stay up.
Shame.
They're never going to win anything.
But all right, I thought I'd throw that in because it was an interesting fact that I learned this week.
Nice, Gareth.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Fun fact. All right, what are you doing this weekend? Before you just walk past the camera and ignore us for the next couple of days.
Got me for a minute and a half.
Oh, really? Are we on a clock here?
Yeah, there's a countdown clock in Leanne there.
Leanne is like, I'm giving him just an hour and a half, not a fucking second more.
Leanne's got 7,000 emails to try to get to.
I know. And she's got to put that Ozempic in later.
There's a meeting that she's currently got to be in.
You do that like it's a...
Like heroin.
Heroin.
Yeah, so... are you feeling a difference with those?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's good.
Definitely. So, because I've had low blood sugar all my life, so having to go from meal to meal without shaking and feeling, you know, really weak, to then overproducing insulin, which is just, when you've got so much of that in your body, you just feel absolutely terrible.
Yeah, you've got to get those balances right, and it's helping with that.
Yes.
Yeah, and have you tried to push heavy weights in your life before?
Yeah, I used to date a bodybuilder. I actually know how to train, how to do weights. So I do something that I do need to get back into, especially with...
So wait, hang a second. You answer that question in a very weird way. Yes, I dated a bodybuilder.
For 7 years. So I grew up with it from the age of 13 to 21. So it's ingrained in me.
She was in the South, Ben. Basically, fighting was how she grew up.
This is why I'm opening I'm opening the door here.
So, it's something that I definitely want to get back into. I used to love it. But, feeling good. Obviously, there are side effects.
But you were going to say something else before you left.
Oh, no. You asked me what I was going to do this weekend.
Yes.
I'm currently renovating an apartment for my mom.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're painting?
That's been, ripping out bathrooms to nothing.
So like those shows, those home improvement shows on that, what's that channel called?
The Home Channel.
That's flippin' cool.
You see, I knew it was intuitive. Fixing homes, renovating homes.
Home
Channel. They're so clever with the way they named things. Otherwise, how would we know?
Terrible use of Leanne's last 90 seconds here.
All right, so what's the hard part here? Pulling up the floors.
I think my mom used to do this all the time. She was a builder before her stroke. And she feels quite weird not being on site. But so I'm doing the site visits every day. And I'm glad I went yesterday because the lights were on and the doors were open. One had locked up.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Just don't let that vagrant attorney come back.
Take
your place again. All right, Ass. Very nice to see you. Have an awesome weekend.
Thanks,
And she walks right past the camera. Bye. Bye. Yeah, you see, it's a big thing. She likes to do
that. Are you forever always going to find that funny?
I'm forever blowing bubbles. All right. I've got a little clip for you. Have you got that guy who sings? Yes, please play this. This is just terrific. If you needed something inspiring today, you know how we sometimes play something that, like Ben's monologue, for example, about Sia Khaleesi. That was
very inspiring.
It really
wasn't meant to be a monologue.
It was terrific. No, I liked it. It was good. We must cut that out and put it in the promo. But here is a singer who I think similarly inspires people, although he may not be aware of it. Take a look, Ben.
Rising up back on the street, and in my time to my chambers, yes. With the distance down back on the street, just a minute in this world to survive. Too many times happens too fast. You trade your passion for glory. The blues are creep on the things of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. So I hear the time to look the fire. Right now, to that
All right, a guy like that should be terrifying. His singing should be like rough and coarse and
like
you know, "Eye of the Tiger" is a good song. You get excited, and then he goes, just doesn't fit.
There's a lot going on there.
It's a lot going on. He looks like a wild man, like he grew up in, I don't know, the mountains of Appalachia or something. But clearly, doesn't sound like he looks. Sometimes the two don't marry.
It must be difficult not having a voice, because your life's going to be a struggle. People do not take you seriously, unfortunately. They really don't.
Well, I said, what do you think he's going to sound like? And yeah. Ben's comment was, not like that. As soon as he came on. All right. I do want to throw this in quickly. We spoke about 3i Atlas the other day.
Yes.
So there is an update. And I know everybody's as into this as I am, and if you're not, well, I'm going to fill you in anyway. The interstellar object 3i Atlas has changed color, Ben, for the first time since entering our solar system.
I was expecting a lot more than just a color change.
Well, what do you want? I mean,
I
want
to see aliens on the hood of something. I want to see sparks.
It is now apparently reddish in color. It started off...
Did it come around faster of the sun? Because that was the whole thing.
We don't know that yet. It hasn't happened yet. We're only going to know in a
change color. Doesn't it go behind the sun?
Give me a chance. I'm talking about the color change. So it has now gone from it's now reddish. It was green, and then it's going to go blue white, or it has been already. I don't know. But this is an update. This is all I've got. It's all I was given.
Okay.
You're not happy with
just
it.
Just wanted more, you know, intergalactic, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you want the alien to come to the window and wave.
Yeah, I wanted something like an entourage, their own blue lights to come out. Color change, come on.
All right. Sorry, that was disappointing. But there we go. Okay, Sibusiso Cotello is here. He is an IFBB pro bodybuilder. He's a model, MC, entrepreneur, and a wellness strategist. And we were talking about men's mental health earlier on. I look at this guy and I think if I was that big, nothing in the world would make me unhappy. Nothing in the world would frighten me. I just fuck shit up every day. It would be so fantastic. And he's sitting right here. And even though I've met you before a couple of times, every time I see you, I just go, Jesus, he's big. Yeah, it's like there's a factor with guys. Like if a guy is taller than you, you just immediately either up your game, which is the positive result of this, or you become an asshole, which I've also seen happen.
Yeah.
And the same must happen to you all the time. When guys meet you, maybe for the first time, they don't know it, but they behave badly because they're intimidated just by the size of you.
Totally, it's primal.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you do with that? How do you have meaningful conversations with people if they don't realize they're being like that with you?
You know, it's funny because I actually had this conversation 2 days ago with my wife.
Mm.
And I was actually telling her, I'm like, it's actually quite crazy because it's that inherent awkwardness that they perceive that they need to act a certain way because I'm in the environment.
Animal instinct it is. Reaction.
It's also
right?
like, yeah, it's trying to be an alpha male dog, in the room.
The
or
big dog walks into the room.
Prove something.
Little dog goes, yeah. That's so what
well
it is.
So well put.
Yeah.
It's very funny. It's very
I mean,
funny.
It also makes it difficult to have a real relationship with someone like ordinary people would. Because there are dynamics that come into play.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for example, women are really mean if there's a pretty girl at the next door table.
Right, yeah.
Guys are really insecure around a guy who's bigger, stronger, or taller than them.
Yeah.
And we've got to just admit it.
Yeah.
We've got to deal with that shit.
Yeah.
So how are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Good,
I'm
man.
Point it's out, been a while. I'm just going to point out, I don't feel insignificant right now. I know him as a wonderful
please,
person.
Please, you've crawled into the –
there's no competition here.
As you can tell, as you can tell by Ben's positioning and posture at the moment, he's like crawling into the corner.
As you know, every week
sofa.
I talk about this couch making me look weird, okay?
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is not
yeah.
the week I want to bring that up
so,
again.
So, I mean, Sibu, the last time you were here, you were on Ben's show on The
yes.
Bounce.
It's all my favorite episode.
And you guys – but I've got to quickly reflect on it because we just spoke about rugby now.
And I loved your monologue. And see you, by the way.
Oh, wasn't it good?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
It's such a great thing.
I really think it's beautiful.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
So you are there in the thick of it every week.
Yeah.
And you've become like a symbol of, I suppose, our dominance and our lordship over rugby.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it's hilarious and it's different every week. But what really goes on behind the scenes? Is there anything we're missing out on that we don't get to see that you see?
I think having to be that close to the boys, I've started to appreciate their work ethic more than I would when you guys don't have access to them. Like what Rossi has done with the team for me, it's I really think you should write a coaching module. And I say coaching holistically because even on a mental perspective, what you've seen with the boys, it's something to be really, really revered. In fact, I was telling one of my friends, like, do you actually hang out with the guys? I'm like, you know, you take it for granted how disciplined they are.
Yeah.
Like, they genuinely, after every single match, will debrief immediately after the match.
There's no play.
You know what I mean? Like, we don't see these things. They go shower, debrief off the match, and then they get to the hotel and it's lights out because they're already anticipating the next move for the next day or the travels. You know, so I got to actually hang out with them when the season was done because that's the kind of discipline these guys actually have. So for me, I think it's just put a that professionalism that we see on the field, it's actually 200% more than what we see, we don't see. Like they are absolutely, absolutely just so disciplined and professional.
There's quite something for you to comment on that because your line of work, what you do, like it's almost psychotic discipline that's needed.
Yeah.
So for you to appreciate that actually just reminds you like, wow, these guys do something.
No, of course, of course. Because for them, I feel like there's a liberty that they can have in terms of, you know, there's fluidity, but they've structured their lives in such a rigid way to actually enhance what they do on the field that it actually blows my mind. You know what I mean? Like you take it for granted because I used to play rugby. You know what I mean? Rugby is one of those sports where, and I mean this with the greatest respect, that I can go out joiling once or twice a week and I still rock up on Saturday and do my best. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they just don't have that. No. They have this strict discipline where we work and then play when it's all done. You know what I mean? There's no play time in between.
Yeah, but I think what Ben's referring to is when you were competing in bodybuilding.
Yeah.
I mean, that is psychotic level discipline. And I know my asshole cousin was your coach for a while, but I say that with love. But you had to eat this, only that.
Right.
You couldn't do this. You had to
deprive
yourself of water. I mean, things that you went through.
Yeah.
Hell, dude.
Yeah.
Absolute hell.
Yeah.
Was it worth it looking
Absolutely.
Back?
Really? Absolutely. Still worth it. I'm still competing next year. Absolutely still worth it. I love it.
So you're still competing?
Yeah. I'm definitely still competing, yeah.
That's super.
It's kind of like people love supercars. This is the only way I keep thinking about it.
Yes.
You know, you see like a Pagani Zonda or you see whatever, like a Bugatti Veyron, all those kind of things. He is like, it's like the human embodiment of
you
that.
You are.
Mm. It takes incredibly smart things, incredibly good resources, discipline, and perfection to come together.
Mm.
And that's what it is. I mean, a lot of guys will go, oh, look at those oaks with the muscles and whatever. Cheapers. But to get that, to understand what a body is capable of, like to understand the levels that a human mind can get to.
Yeah.
And the mind is the important thing here, right? Like,
absolutely.
I'm glad Ben brought that up because the level of self-control,
yes,
discipline,
yes,
dedication that
delayed
is required.
Delayed gratification.
Delayed gratification. I mean, you mentioned
– Anand was talking about that earlier with why 16-year-olds shouldn't vote.
Yeah, absolutely. But for other people in your life too, I mean, it's,
of course,
it puts them through hell.
Of course. Absolutely.
So is your wife on board for you competing next year?
Absolutely. I wouldn't do it otherwise. Right.
Jesus.
I call it getting the approval from head office. I call it the head office.
now you also, for people who don't know this, and it may not be news to everybody, but you got a degree in chemical engineering.
Civil
engineering. Yeah. And people by and large assume, and they want to put you in a box. Right?
Of course.
So when they see you come out at the beginning of the rugby match and you're doing your MP thing, they're like, that oak has to be a meathead.
Yeah.
This is what are your day to day things that you have to do? Because I mean, people wouldn't put you in the civil engineering block.
For sure.
They would assume that you must have been a rugby player at high school.
Yeah.
You got into gym. You became a bodybuilder.
Right.
Sure, you worked hard and you've got good genes and all of that stuff. But that's kind of where you focused all the time.
100%.
And people don't like it when you can do two or three things.
Yeah.
Because then they have to think more about you than the convenient box that they'd put you
100%. In. 100%. Society does that, right? Yeah. You're right. Society does that. They make you to become this one-dimensional person.
Yeah.
And especially if you're good at one thing, they expect you to only be good at that one specific thing, which is really short-minded, right?
It makes you frustrated because then on the occasion where you feel like you do want to prove them wrong,
right.
Which does, we all fall prey to that sometimes, it becomes a bit of work for you.
Of course.
But also some of the time you're like, I couldn't care less what you think of me.
And which is, normally my default setting. It's normally my default setting.
People, because I'm sure there are lots of people in the country who don't know you, but they love you because they see you on TV every other week.
Yeah.
Do you get any shittiness from people?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what? What do they say to you? That, well, who's got the balls to say shit to you?
It's normally not in person. I'll be very honest. It's normally not in person.
I'd love to see someone be very frank. Yo, you're a puss.
When people are drinking, they tend to be very, very...
Yeah.
Let's call
Suddenly
it brave.
That courage.
Let's
yeah.
call it brave. Right. But 100%. Like, especially on social media, man. I mean, being a professional bodybuilder, I don't take it for granted that what I do has to be on a public platform. So you have to take the brunt of that, right? And the responsibility that your work is in a public platform. But then you get people that will come on and be like, oh, you got such a bad back, or, you know, they're always criticizing. And then half of the time you go on their profile, you're like, man, this is not worth the comments. And just keep it moving, because 90% of the time, you can see they've never stepped a day.
They look bovine, and they want to give you shit.
Point out, when he says bad back, not like I have a bad back. Yeah. It's like it's not sculpted in a certain way.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no. I know. There are people. Listen, dude, the things I found out through people I know in this, the posing.
Yes.
Like these guys have to practice posing like a choreographed dance.
Yes.
Or a ballet, you have to know exactly how far to extend your arm and which way to turn. And
your understanding of anatomy alone is needed.
Yeah. I mean, the knowing what's going on in your body. Are you so tuned into that stuff that you know if an injury's coming, or that you can feel when something's slightly wrong and how you can fix it before it happens?
Absolutely. Over the years, you have to, right?
Because
this is my work, right? So over the years, I started even shifting certain medicine and practices as cure medication rather than preventative medication, right? So, for example, seeing a chiropractor, for me, it's not a cure anymore. where a lot of people see a bio or a chiro or a sport massage therapist.
Your chiropractor has to be a big fucking strong guy. Right? It can't be some...
It's actually a strong lady.
Really? Because I promise you. I've got a lady who I've been to a couple of times, yeah. And I'm like, there's no way she can possibly... How does she even get close enough to the muscles?
Shout out to my chiropractor.
She's putting all of her effort in elbows, and she's only like... you're like, oh, that tickles.
No, man, shout out to my chiropractors. They're very good. They're very, you know, strong, and they've got these fancy beds that can just manipulate me and just get my bones aligned.
She must be
and stuff.
A miracle worker.
No, she's amazing.
So how often do you go to the chiropractor?
So I try to go every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks. So as I said, for me, it's a preventative medication. It's not a cure medication. And I really would love more people to do that. You know what I mean? Recovery for me, again, it's not like there's certain things that we only click when we're in trouble. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So we react to injuries. So I'm more of preventing them because obviously I'm trying to get the longevity in the sport.
But Sibu, to not go on too long about how you look, the reality is you carry a lot more meat on your bones
Absolutely.
Than the rest of us do.
Yeah.
Have you looked into what the possible negative consequences of being the machine that you are
of
might be when you're 50 or 60? And what worries you the most?
Look, bodybuilding in its purest form, and in fact, I was telling my mates, is that they try to create you to be an X-frame, right? We call it the X-frame look. So yeah. Which means you've got these huge shoulders, big back, small waist, then big legs. So what it does, it actually kind of puts your waist or your midsection in a vulnerable situation.
Right.
So now what happens with most of us...
Would that be your core and your spine?
100%, right? So what happens with most of us, we're so fixated in building these big legs, this big back, that we actually don't take a lot of, you know, pay a lot of attention in our midsection. And I felt vulnerable to that. So over the years, I find myself having to correct what I should have done in the inception of my bodybuilding career, where I should have paid more attention to having a stronger core to sustain the fact that I was going to put on so much muscle. So that also becomes a conundrum that you have to play around with.
Do you think that was Ronnie Coleman's thing? Because the greatest back in the day, right?
I would love to think so, man. Like, I don't want to speculate what caused
this
injury.
Yeah, yeah. And he can't walk, basically.
You know what I mean? But I'd like to think that probably aided that. You know, it's not... It's the fixation of trying to cultivate one thing and then neglecting the other instead of doing it simultaneously, which is a trap a lot of us fall into when it comes to bodybuilding.
What do you do on an airplane?
Emergency, and I have to do aisle seat.
Right.
It's half of my body.
Because I love you, but if you came down the fucking aisle, I wouldn't want you sitting next to me.
I feel sorry for people when I approach them. Like half of the time I go there, I'm like, oh my God, I hope it's a small human. Or I just... In most cases, if I kind of like see if it's peak time, genuinely speaking, I have to book the seat next to me.
Right.
Genuinely, especially if it's a daytime flight. Yeah, because for me, it's also like I don't want to make – it's not about my comfortability. And, it's the guy sitting next to me.
There is no point in you trying to use the loo on a plane. You won't fit in there.
It's a struggle.
There is no point in you – there are many things that the rest of us just take for granted as regular-sized humans.
Scratching my back, yeah.
You can't – you've never been able to scratch your own back. There are parts of your back that are inaccessible for all time. This is also part of the reason you have a wife.
Yes.
Right.
She's my back
Let's
scratcher.
Be fair. Yeah. These are the struggles that this poor man.
Absolutely.
To be serious for a second, you are very involved in helping other people to be the best version of themselves.
Always, man.
Because that's what you do. You
that's
live it.
That's the best reward.
And again, maybe this is a guy thing, but when we see other people who have done what they said they would do.
Yeah.
They are a walking, living example of being the best they can be.
Yeah.
It's easier for us to believe and to listen to their advice.
100%.
So people will ask you for this stuff. When it comes to mental health, do you have any areas of particular interest at the moment? Are there things that you are trying to get other people to understand? Are there things you've struggled with?
Yeah. I mean, Ben and I actually spoke, right? I was actually diagnosed with depression in 2017. Obviously, with depression, they call them the terrible twins, comes with the anxiety, right? So for me, I've always been...
So this is when you were already training and...
I was already training. I was already 100%. I was already involved.
Not enough exercise endorphins? Come on.
You know, like you think that, you know, I train hard enough that I should feel good. But, you know, it comes with...
It's very different metrics, though, because when Gareth and I train, we feel good. When you train, it's like... you're getting to perfection. You can't get to perfection today.
100%.
And you're constantly scrutinizing those kind of things. Like, we don't finish our trading sessions and go, shit, now we got to really look, was that worth it?
Yeah.
We get a sweat on. We talk some shit in the sauna. But with you,
yeah, I mean, walk out of there and I'm like, fucking well done for just being here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I rocked up. Really,
like, I've been in the gym when you work out.
Yeah.
It's not a workout. You are sculpting. You are working. It is it's like engineering, basically.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand how our endorphin stuff, it's not really part of this.
Yeah.
So you were depressed. Were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed. I'm currently on medication. 100%. Yeah.
You still are?
Still am on medication.
Okay.
It's been an ongoing... I don't want to call it a battle because I feel like I'm on the other side and I'm winning, right? I just also like reframing my brain when it comes to those kind of chats.
What does that mean? Because meds aside,
yeah,
what did you do to get out of that? Because it's a place no one wants to be.
Of course. Of course.
One goes, now that I've found depression, this is where I want to live.
Yeah, 100%, of course. It's a very uncomfortable situation to be in.
Because, I mean, I jokingly said earlier,
yeah,
to Dr. Hanan, who is a professional, I said, well, if you just, as a guy, stop fucking moaning,
yeah,
and get more exercise,
yeah,
and have more sex, all the trouble goes away.
100%.
But that's obviously – no, but I mean it's not all true because you were doing all the exercise.
Of course.
You had things to do. It's not as if you were sitting around with nothing to do.
Yeah.
So what else did you do to get it right?
I think at the cusp of it, right, it's also one having to admit that you are going through the situation. And then once you've done that, you then create an environment for yourself to thrive. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. It's creating the ecosystem. Ecosystem is the people that you're around. Mm. You don't want to be miserable and still keep a lot of miserable people around you that, you know, aided the negativity. So,
so
that
many
was
people
also,
do.
They do, right? Misery
so
likes company,
people
right?
Do,
so
yeah.
It's that kind of thing. You know, you got to be very attentive where you spend your time, where you spend your energy. That also became a very important thing for me. What am I exposing my mind to? You know what I mean? Am I exposing my mind to things that keep feeding into this depression and the anxiety, or am I creating an environment for myself to actually get better?
I had a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday about the power of no.
Oh, have you read the book?
Okay, so But just saying no to shit.
Yeah.
Because we're mostly all people pleasers.
We absolutely are.
And most people in the world also don't want to miss out. So when someone says, do you want to – my default's no.
Yeah.
I didn't earn it. I didn't learn it.
Yeah.
I don't have any special tips for people who can't do it. But
yeah,
usually I take enormous pleasure out of saying no to people.
Okay.
I'm just a horrible kind of creature. Most people are not like that. They only discover almost too late that saying no is the best way to, first of all, preserve your time.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're a busy person and
absolutely,
and you have a lot going on, or you're a person who's got fuck all to do all day, creating time for yourself and using that time effectively is the greatest gift of all.
Absolutely.
Because time is a limited resource, right? You can always get more food. You can always make more or less money.
Yeah.
You can always do things that make you feel happy. But time is limited. You don't know how much you've got.
Absolutely.
And saying no to stuff is just an absolute wizard way to create more time in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's important, as you said, where you spend your time.
Mm.
It's absolutely, absolutely important.
So what do you do when you're not in the gym?
I'm a home creature, man.
I
love being at home, man. I really love being. I'm a homebody. I love.
So, what do you do at home?
Sleep.
What do you watch?
I recover.
Series?
Yeah, I recover. Sleep. I mean, it's actually part of my biggest thing. Recovery is so important.
Does your
wife
have to spend 18 hours a day just preparing and serving you food? Because I don't want to know what you consume on a day to day.
It's a lot of food. It's 7,000 calories. Is a lot of food to consume.
Holy
wow!
That's
what James is. James is 7,000 calories.
Just give people an idea of what 7,000 calories looks like on a tray.
James?
You're consuming about
James,
one.
Can you lie down on the table here for us?
Yes.
What is that?
It's about 1.2 kilos of chicken a day with maybe about a kilo of lean mince a day and about 1.5 kilos of rice cooked.
Whoa. What do you miss the most because you can't eat it and you're not allowed it?
So I think I've been, you know, when certain things happen in your life and you realize you genuinely were supposed to do certain aspects of your career.
Mm.
I'm a foodie, but I'm not a foodie. Let me explain. Like, I love food, but I'm also not pedantic about food. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I occasionally love having this and that, but...
But there's nothing that you've got a craving
for. No, I really don't. I really don't.
That you're holding back on.
No. Like, I have a bit of a sweet tooth, but it's also not like a chocolate sweet tooth. So I like scones and muffins and kind of thing. So, but otherwise, like bodybuilding, when I realized how monotonous the food can be, I was like, okay, sweet, let's go. Also, as I said, it's reframing your brain. Where you realize you're not eating for pleasure, you're eating for function.
Yeah, it's the fuel.
I'm fueling
thing.
My body. Yeah. It's I use it as fuel. So when people look at a burger, I start calculating the carbs, protein, and fats. You know what I mean? So for me, that's where the reframing of your brain actually happens.
Carl says Al Gore just threw up in his mouth hearing how much the Cebu eats. Garrett's whole hypothesis has just been proven wrong. Fantastic. Yes, I'm very happy to be proven wrong on the show, as you know. In fact, it gives me a bit of a thrill too. We went to the same school, says Marco. I was in matric and he was in grade 8 when Sibs was still small. And Marco is also a bodybuilder.
Surname starts with a P.
Yeah, Petrovsky.
Oh my goodness. He had a body of a god. First team captain for water polo and swimming. And I remember the first time I got to school, as you said, like I was a tiny little guy. I used to play wing. Small guy. I remember seeing him, he had his blazer on his shoulder, and I looked at this guy's shoulders, I'm like, he looks like he was a sculpted god, like this blue eyes.
He still looks good. He had a hell of a personal journey in
between. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's in a wheelchair and he just does.
No, he's absolutely.
He does a lot of
inspirational.
Yeah, very good.
He had an amazing physique.
I want to look for shit with you here because Slippery Pickle says, ask him if he skips leg day, which is
never.
Yeah, but it's also such a. Old, tired bodybuilder joke.
Right? You're right.
Why do guys? Why do guys strike? Gee, look at the man. He doesn't skip leg day.
Leg day tries to skip him.
Yeah, leg day runs a fucking mile away when they see people coming.
When he walks towards us.
Wow, dude.
Love that man.
But is there particular workouts that you do kind of enjoy more? If you know you're going to work a certain part of your body, like, okay, cool, it makes me happier.
Actually, no, you know, and I think because I drew inspiration from Arnold, right? So Arnold was asked this question, was like, what's your favorite body part to train? He goes, all of them. And then he's like, okay, what body part do you hate training? He goes, all of them. So I think that has been my mantra at the gym. I love what I do. So I don't have a favorite workout or favorite. What I will say, I love training legs. There's something quite psychotic about me about training legs.
Yeah, it's a sign of maturity. It is, because like when you go to gym, okay, you got your certain
legs, and achievement, because
I love
it's the hardest.
Legs.
You should, everyone should train legs twice a week, right?
I love training legs. There's something. Yeah, there's a part of your brain where you have to go into in order to get a good, as you said, a good leg workout.
I was having this exact same conversation with a man who was hardly even in a towel yesterday in the sauna. I have the best conversation in life in the sauna.
Wow.
We put microphones in there.
I avoid those.
No, I mean, like, people talk to me.
First of all, because you take up the whole sauna.
Well, that's also true.
I never really initiate conversation, but people seem to be quite chatty.
No, I know. Yeah.
But like,
and you have political conversations.
Oh, everything
you solve the world's problems.
I was having this chat with this guy, and he's like, you know what the great thing about training and like what it does for your mind in the moment is that everyone's got problems in the day.
Yeah.
But there's no problem quite like what a squat rack can really get you.
Yeah.
But it's how you solve that by getting through it. Because it's like, it sucks. This guy's like, you know, you don't worry if that girl doesn't text you back when you're like 6 reps in and you got to push to 8 and
100%.
You do it.
100%.
And like to the people who don't go to gym, it's like, oh yeah, meathead maths, whatever. But there's something beautiful in that it gets you to a space where it's like, okay, I can do that.
Mm.
And you apply that to so many other things. And before you know it, it's like one foot in front of the rest.
One of my favorite things in the whole world is getting home after I've been at the gym and I've really put in the effort. Because some days you don't.
Mm.
You go through the motions, but you're not putting in the effort.
Right.
And I'm by no means as experienced in the world of fitness and training as, in fact, the glimmer of light on the horizon is what you guys are already, you know, you particularly, you've experienced the absolute apogee of this.
Absolutely.
But to me, the best feeling is to get home and to actually be tired.
Mm.
Like, I love that. Then I know I'm going to sleep well.
Exactly. Exactly.
I know that I'm not fat. I know I've fought off the monsters of being lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
just such a good way of putting it, because great. Because like when Gareth said, what do? It's like recovery is big, but you've earned that.
Yeah.
There's something so cool about recovery because it's like this earned experience.
And I love the way you say that. I always say I want to earn my sleep. So I work hard at the gym to earn my recovery. Otherwise, it feels like I feel guilty. Like I'm sitting there going, what are you recovering from? You didn't train that hard. Yeah. So you have the self-talk as well. Like, okay, tomorrow you got to work like better. You know what I mean? Because you want to earn your sleep. You want to earn that recovery.
You know, there are not a lot of people in the world who look like you do and who've put the amount of work into their body that you have. Do you get people asking you to be in movies, commercials? I mean, there must be a lot of that going on.
Yeah, well, recently, 100%, especially, you know, being on TV now with the box, it's kind of put me in the forefront of guys going, ooh, if we want a guy to play, you know, a guy to play this particular role, that's the kind of guy. I'm actually currently working on a project in Cape Town. Can't really disclose much.
Sure.
But yeah, because they needed a character who looks this particular shape. And I was like, okay, sweet. You know, so it's been a beautiful journey. It's been a beautiful journey.
Would you take up that kind of thing as a permanent career if it came to you on the right basis?
No, I believe in keeping the real thing the real thing. My real thing right now is bodybuilding.
Right.
So anything that will distract me from my bodybuilding, I work all, everything else around
that's
the bodybuilding.
That's all consuming, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
How long do you think you still want to keep doing that, though? Because there is a window period.
100%. There is. I've always saw myself, I'm 34 now. Geez, I sound old.
34?
It's okay. I'm 43. You're good.
So I think at 40, I'm done. So I've got the next 6-7 years, maybe pushing it. And then after that, you know, because in bodybuilding, you start actually your prime is actually 32. So that's when you start yielding results, seeing how the body's starting to form and, you know, get into shape. So then you have a very like short window period, like 5 years.
What role do the genes play in all of this?
They do. I won't lie. Like for the longest time, I didn't like that conversation. In fact, I had this conversation with Ben because it felt like it excluded a certain type of people. Right. But then again, I had to.
Yeah, like dwarves.
Hey, man, it's not discriminate.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't like that conversation because it felt like it excluded certain people. However, though, you have to come to reality that there's certain sports that need a certain genetic type.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to be 5 foot tall and trying to play basketball.
There is a reason that the Kenyans seem to outrun everybody.
100%.
You know, there's all kinds. So who in your family, where does this come from?
Both my parents. Eh? My
really?
Dad was a pro boxer. My mom was a javelin and shot put athlete. I also didn't even know I had genetics for bodybuilding, to be honest with you. I really didn't, right? And I stumbled into this, and all of a sudden, I was called the kid prodigy because this guy was a phenomenon amongst us with these genetics. I was like, what does that even mean? And then starting to see how my body was developing and the genetics that came through, I was like, this is what it means. And it is an unfortunate truth, but the biggest example I'll ever give you, and I spoke to Ben about this, 2012, Phil Heath is on stage competing against Kai Greene. And the quickest way to describe what genetics does on stage is the exact sentence this guy said, one of the commentators, I think it was Robbie. And he said, Kai Greene is an amazing athlete. He came in condition. He looked symmetrical. Everything was great. But you can't help look at Phil Heath. You look at Kai Greene and your eyes automatically jump back to Phil Heath. That's what genetics do.
Yeah.
There's just a certain aesthetic and beautiness about how Phil Heath had the genetics for bodybuilding, that no matter how hard you try and not look at him, your eyes gravitate towards him. Well, that's the best way for me to explain genetics.
I take great pleasure in people who are better than me
at things, right?
People who just have a skill set or a genetic advantage or whatever else that I don't have. I don't get jealous. I mean, I know it's human nature that people think everything should be equal and we should all have a fair chance. And I keep saying to people who talk like that, the point of life is inequality.
Mm.
I love the fact that there's a Sibu in the world who's
100%.
Just like the sterling example of how you can excel at a very particular discipline. 100%. And if you have genetic advantages that propel you in a way that the rest of us just have no hope of reaching, good, all the more for you. That means you're just that much further ahead and therefore more of a shining example
100%.
In that field. I like people who break the rules. Yeah. And whatever those advantages, those predispositions, those anomalies maybe that make people like that, I think it's bloody fantastic.
Like, I love horses, but I can never be a jockey. I'm 186 meters.
I wonder what kind of war horse would they have to find for
you. Like, I'm 186 meters tall. I can't.
I mean, if you sit on a horse, your feet still touch the ground.
Right. So it's one of those things. There's certain people that can do that sport, and congrats to them. Sure. I admire that.
Yeah.
There's, you know what I mean?
There are certain things that you can and can't do. What for you are sometimes, and I don't want you to like be depressed.
Let's not do that.
But what are the things that you absolutely can't do, and sometimes you think, shit, that would have been nice.
Weight limits on bungee jumping. So it's in bungee.
Can't do bungee.
There's a weight limit on that.
Oh man.
I took my son to, is it Bounce in Kalami?
Yeah.
And I couldn't bounce with him. Yeah, there was a weight limit.
What
I think 125 was the weight limit there. I'm 136 at the moment.
Damn it.
So I was
can't they build a trampoline for you?
Right. So there's those kind of things. So certain rides I can't do at like Gold Rift City. Because also just the mechanics of it, I just don't fit. And then they're like, oh, it's a safety issue. Right. So it's one of those things.
Damn it. Those are all fun things I hadn't thought about.
Yeah.
But so as far as like cardio pursuits and that kind of stuff, because your composition is so important.
Right.
So, I mean, like, you're not going to suddenly just go play a game of paddle.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's those kind of things. Because when you're in training in particular, it's like everything you do to the actual movement is – you got to track it.
100%. That's very true. So there's certain things that I also just cannot do because I'm trying to make sure I don't get injured. You know, I watch guys play paddle. I'm like, geez, I would have snapped a hamstring. In fact, I went to a Chinese foundation about 2 weeks ago and there was a celebrity race. Some guy, I post the video and some guy says, I was running as if I've got the handbrake up. Because obviously in my mind, I'm like, I want to sprint because I used to be a sprinter actually. Yeah. But then I'm like, but I also just don't want to pull a hammy. So now here I am running in a very awkward way. So there's certain pleasures that I really can't enjoy and, you know, get participate in, but it's life.
Who are the greatest? Because there seems to be a conversation going on in the comment section about the greatest people in bodybuilding. Obviously, people bring up Arnold.
Yeah.
There are people who talk about Kai Greene.
Right.
There are people who talk about who else is in here? Ziz.
Okay. Yeah.
Know who that is?
I get why they like
him. And obviously, there are plenty of people who you would have been inspired by.
Absolutely.
Who are the greatest?
So for me, genetically, because I feel like we have the same genetic structure, Kevin Levron is one of my favorite bodybuilders. And also, I think greatness also has to be measured in some form or the other, right? South Africa is the greatest rugby team of all time. This particular team, because of the medals that we've had, we've won back-to-back, you know, World Cups, and there's a certain yardstick we can use. So on paper, actually, the greatest bodybuilder of all time is actually Dexter Jackson. He's won the most pro shows. He's won every single award there has ever been in bodybuilding. Arnold Classic. He's won Mr. Olympia.
Wow.
So that becomes the yardstick in which we measure him.
Okay.
And then obviously we have Ronnie Coleman who comes into the mix. He's been called the king of bodybuilding because of just the genetic freak that he was and the fact that we'll most likely never experience another Ronnie Coleman in our lifetime, right? And then for me, there's people's psyche in bodybuilding being Mr. Olympia that I aspire to. Jay Cutler, for me, one of the most phenomenal bodybuilders because he was able to win Mr. Olympia, lose it, and go and get it back. You know, not a lot of people can claim that up until recently with Derek Lunsford. So I think that becomes a very, you know, what is the yardstick in which we're using to actually call someone the greatest of all time?
You want to be able to measure,
you know what I mean?
Greatness.
Arnold definitely can be in the conversation.
Well, it's also, I mean, personality must play
as
part.
Well, you know
when
what
it
mean?
Comes to Arnold, I mean, that guy, you know, I think he let himself down with a couple of political comments every now and then.
Right.
But the guy is just a phenomenon.
Absolutely.
And I, yes, I would love to meet Arnold. And yes, I think Arnold would be fun to hang around with.
I really
but
think
also,
so too.
I just admire the fact that everything he does, yeah. he wins at.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go to America. So he goes to America.
And does
I'm
going to
be governor yeah. of California.
And he does
he
it.
He becomes it. He yeah. won, I'm going to win the bodybuilding. He wins. I'm going to make the greatest movies.
Yes.
He makes the greatest movies.
I call him the Batman of bodybuilding.
I'm going to fuck the maid.
Well,
he
come
does
on.
That too. Yeah, I mean, the child with the maid. He was just great.
I call him the Batman of bodybuilding, right? Yeah. Because what is Batman's superpower?
He doesn't have a superpower.
He's rich.
Right? So I guess that
no,
is
no, he
his
does.
Superpower.
He doesn't have a superpower.
But it's his mentalness, right? Exactly. I think his superpower is his mental point, capacity. Yeah. Is he's able to understand, perceive. He's, in fact, let me tell you why I call him the Batman of bodybuilding. Someone said, if Arnold's competing in this day and age, mm-hmm. do you think Arnold will be Mr. Olympia? And my answer was yes.
Yeah.
Because Arnold will study, will sit down, double down, and do whatever it takes right. to be the bodybuilder that's needed to be the best in this era. Because remember, he doesn't come from the mass monster era. So if it came to a time where he needed to be a mass monster, best believe Arnold will do that. Yeah, so he's the Batman of bodybuilding.
Well, he's the Terminator as well. Like, he'll put all that together.
He does what it takes.
He does what it takes. But so for me, he's the Batman of bodybuilding.
I'd love that sort of the movie about him. It was like a biopic. It wasn't like a huge budget thing, but it was his life. And where he came from and what it was, where
absolutely.
The sport was, where he was as
absolutely.
Well. But I think those guys would have had the most fun as well. Because it wasn't quite as professional. It was definitely getting there and that because of them.
Yeah.
But those guys must have had parties there. Like,
I really think
Arnold
it's the problem. What do you mean? After he won, I think Arnold, sorry, not the Arnold, the Olympia 1975. He's sitting there with the whiskey, smoking a cigar. I'm like, that is actually
but
so cool.
He still parties hard. And he's got a zoo at home. He's got like wild animals in his back garden.
What a man.
His whole family loves him. All the other actors and actresses would love to be invited to his house.
Yeah.
And he's just fun to be around. He makes people laugh.
Absolutely.
He laughs a lot. He seems like a very happy guy.
Yeah, and he still trains. I mean, obviously, where is he now? He's like in his
70s.
Yeah.
Must be. Yeah, must be. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what a full life. What an absolute full life he must have had. But, like, you see those old memes come up, like, with him driving that old Merc.
And he's you see his recent video. He went to the gym. He looked at a guy. He's like, stick to your diets. Just change the gear protocol.
And you're going to take him seriously.
Of course.
If Arnold gives you any advice, you're going to listen to him. All right. So one other quick thing, because I know we've got to move on to something else in a second. Yeah. But are there any hacks that you've discovered along the way? And obviously, this doesn't work for everybody, but maybe you've discovered some little secrets, hacks, some supplements, some things that you do that may be useful to people who are either just training to be fit or that are thinking of competing.
Yeah. Peptides, man. There's a very big ongoing conversation right now with peptides. And it's funny because we've always known about peptides, but it's just now become such a bigger conversation to have with anti-aging, with testosterone, you know, development.
What form do you take it in?
Sorry?
What form do you take peptides in? Like
injection.
Oh, really?
100%. Yeah. Injection. Ah. You know, it's an amino acid, long-chain amino acid. So there's been a very ongoing, I mean, collagen is a peptide.
Sure.
You know, a lot of ladies right now are going, collagen is a thing for the skin development, hair, nails. So those have become my hack. BPC now has become, in fact, I think BPC just got approved by the FDA as a thing to take because it helps with, you know, your recovery. So it's, I think those are the current hacks that, you know, I feel like I'm utilizing them now that maybe 5 years ago I was like, they're there, but we didn't really pay attention to them, you know? So I think those are the kind of things. And then recovery, I'm such a huge advocate. I'll never stop being a huge advocate of recovery. In fact, earlier you spoke about mental health. Ice bathing actually has been aided in helping mental health. Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I always said that
I use it for recovery. Yeah, turns out it actually helps for my depression. I was like, well, that's a win. I get to recover and not be depressed. Here we go.
You're too cold to be depressed.
I like that.
Completely. I mean, I said when I was going through the height of that, people make a big deal about recovery, but it's the mental benefits.
Absolutely.
Again, it's like problem solving, okay?
Yeah.
Massive problem, just like we said, the squat rack, massive problem, but I can solve it. I can do this, and you come out and you go, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
And it's a sense of achievement. Like, we need those little things the whole time. We need those little breadcrumbs to get us to better places.
Absolutely.
I do love it. Anyway, dude, you keep inspiring the rest of us to be mere mortals while you are playing among the gods.
Okay, I'm pumped to go to the gym this weekend.
In his company. Yeah. You're very cool, man. Thank you so much for coming to see us.
Thank you for having me.
Siso Cotello, and you've got social media. People can follow you there and everything else, and you get to see him before the rugby.
Yeah.
Are you off to the game? Not this week.
No, so I don't do international games yet. Right. So hopefully, though, for the World Cup, we can maybe get the conversation going. I'd love to go with the boys. But at the moment, we just do local games. Yeah.
No, it's a fixture, man. Those
other unions will not want you there. They will not want to help the Springboks in any way.
No. You should hear the conversations after the New Zealand match and that picture blew up with me and Sia. Jeez. So, yeah, maybe they might not want me there. But, hopefully for the World Cup.
Some guy in Ireland right now is going to ban you from World Rugby. He will.
They're going to find some. They'll make up some rule. Absolutely.
It's not a lot.
All
it's
right. Sibu, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, guys. Really
we have got Summer Sambit joining us in just a short while from now. I've also got to show you. Have you got that picture flex of what Prince Andrew and Fergie are going to be doing for money now? Just in case people don't know, because we were talking about him earlier, and it turns out they do have a plan.
Crown jewels, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Pawning the stuff at a flea market. There you can see him going, over here, this scepter, which my mother looked after and treasured for a long time. If anyone wants it, 28 quid. That's a bargain basement next to the old granny.
Cash in the attic.
Secondhand books.
He should actually host Cash in the Attic. BBC have got all these old like anorak shows. He should just host it. Because he could have really unrelatable anecdotes. Well, obviously every family needs this, you know. And it'd be so funny because he'll be so unrelatable.
Yeah, I actually think that's a very good idea. Yeah. Apparently, he's also very tricky, wants certain pillows. I mean, he's a prince, you know? And it's okay, I suppose, if you're Prince Charles, but if you're Prince Andrew,
As much as we joke about Andrew, Peter, Andrew, all that kind of stuff, you make a great point. He's just such a soft target to this whole Epstein thing. He probably did the least. You know, there's a guy who was... I mean, he had to endure Fergie for a while. You put any sort of young girl near him, the oak's going to be like a dog at dinner to him. Come on. I mean, we could all sit here all high and mighty, like, I'd never do that. Trust me, that oak's life, suddenly around young hot chicks on yachts. Come on.
All right.
Let's not all live in glass houses here. But yes, there's laws in this world, and there's ways to behave. And we must not deviate from that.
All right, quickly, you mentioned, and I thought about this after you brought it up, a couple of things you really love about this time of year and a couple of things you really hate. So I already spoke to Leanne about the music and the shops. I do have to admit that it does kind of give me a little bit of a festive feeling, and I don't mind that. I love the decorations, and I love Christmas music. I haven't listened to any yet, but I'm going to treat myself to some probably by the end of this month. And then I know I'll be sick of it by the end of December. But it's special. It's part of the excitement.
It is. It's so super special. So I tell you what, the only thing I don't like about this, and it's a very weird one, but I'm going to be honest anyway. I don't like being invited to things, but obviously you want to be invited to things.
Because
you're invited to like group things, right? And it's festive and it's lovely. Everyone wants to see you before everyone goes on the holiday. Fuck, I hate that though. Because now you've got like, there's lots of things I want to do every single weekend. But the moment you don't get invited, that's what the festive season does for you, right? Keeps you in this sort of like weird push and pull sort of phase. I don't want to go to most of the things, but at the same time, I want to see people.
So what do we do? Do we invite you or not?
Yeah, invite me.
Okay, and then you can decide.
But I mean, I've got things on. But I mean, like to me, that's the only conflict I have at this time of year. Sure. I love this time of year so much that something as stupid as that is the only thing that actually gets me.
I do like gifts and gift giving and all of that shit.
Sorry,
I like that.
In this aspect here, James, what? I'm going to move out. I know it gets like weird Tetris right about now.
No, it's fine. We'll still say goodbye to you in a second. Okay,
cool.
Oh, well, don't panic. We've done this before. James is like a really bad choreographer.
James,
managing
a
dance.
You have those things like at the airport.
Yeah. Like the signs.
Like those reflective paddles. Okay, bend you that way.
Yes. that help them park the planes.
Yeah,
park absolutely.
The planes. Yeah, okay, so like that's a weird one, but like you know, I looked at mince pies yesterday in Woolworths, and I just thought, yeah, it's time. Yes. It's such a happy thing.
I agree.
It's such a happy thing. And then, you know, I always go down to Cape Town, obviously, to my family for the Christmas thing. And, yeah, it's just understanding that there's a countdown now to that. And you get all the things together. It's just beautiful.
Listen, I've had the greatest fortune in the last couple of weeks to spend a lot of time with my family. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's happy. It's a proper privilege. And we went away to celebrate my parents' 50th anniversary.
Incredible.
The other day. I mean, you know, there are people who can't keep it together for a fucking month. And these two have been together for, and believe me, they argue and they fight. But sure. 50 years, I am just very impressed with that.
And the entire family is a result of that.
It's just great. And this weekend, we've got my sister's boyfriend's birthday, so I'm going to see them again. You can't get enough of that stuff, man. I can only say that if you have family, appreciate them, spend as much time with them as you can. You will never, ever regret that.
Well, send my regards to Minty. I hope he's having a wonderful time.
I'll tell him. Tell him. All right, Ben, fuck off.
Watch today on the Bounce Show, special feature, Flip Van der Merwe for the rugby. Yeah, it's a beautiful weekend.
Get the plug in. Very good. Yeah, and Flip is terrific. He's a great guest. All right, cheers, Ben. There it is. Hey, Summer, how's it? I only saw you now when James snuck you in inadvertently.
Yeah.
Nice to see you, dude. Summer Sambit is a digital creator and social commentator. He's known, and I've known him for a while now. I've watched him with interest for his raw, unfiltered takes on culture and on politics and on everyday life. Did you bring a cushion?
No, unfortunately, I couldn't because I had to really prepare for the traffic.
Oh, dude, it's horrible, huh? And you came from, what, the West Rand?
You see what I mean?
Oh.
But, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to pass Sandhurst either because apparently that's where all the mafia bosses live. So
well, it's also, clearly you saw that mansion that was on in the news and on TV the other day.
Bruh,
with a
mansion? Four, I saw some unreleased Lambos in there.
Four Lamborghinis of the same color.
When you see your neighbors in Sandhurst filming your cars getting raided, that's when you know those cars are very fishy.
So, Summer, you've been doing all of these videos now for how long? When did it all start?
Well, I really started about a year and a half ago.
That's what I
You could say I started gaining traction about a year ago. Maybe early February is when, you know, people really started to bother clicking on my videos and just wondering what I had to say.
I think it's such a great time. And I often criticize the internet because I think, you know, everyone's a content creator. And frankly, it's boring. And like the people who are doing just nonsense on there. They change their hairstyle and they get 5 million clicks and views.
Man, that is so true.
So it's nonsense. But I do love it when people have a point of view because it's actually much rarer than everybody thinks. You know, you often hear everyone has an opinion, but most people they don't tell you what their opinion is because they're terrified. You just seem to be impervious to that kind of criticism. Maybe it bugs you when you're on your own late at night. I don't know. But it is a rare thing to find people, particularly, how old are you now?
19.
Yeah, you see, particularly someone of 19 years old who isn't absolutely worried about what everyone else thinks of them all the time. And you're prepared to say a lot of stuff that most of us will agree with, and then sometimes we'll say things that nobody agrees with, and you do both with the same amount of volition.
Yeah, you know, it all started when I stopped taking my medical supplements. No, I'm just kidding.
You could have been Sibo Cotello.
Now, what really happens is you develop a thick skin for these things. It's with practice and with consistency, you really develop a thick skin for what other people have to say. You know, I used to listen to some of these other guys and they'd say the best way to not care of what others think is to just start. And when you really stop caring, that's when you really get some traction because the audience really gets to see the real you. And that's the beauty of it all. They appreciate your most authentic self. You know, there's some of these guys who've been doing this for like 6 years, 7 years, and they still haven't gotten about 500 subscribers. Because they keep trying to be someone else, and it's not working.
Uh-huh.
You know, Gareth Cliff is Gareth Cliff because he's not scared to be Gareth Cliff. And
so what kind of a childhood did you have? Because confidence is a rare thing. You have to be. I do agree that it's easier now to put yourself on camera because it's almost second nature to so many people, especially young people. But confidence is not second nature. Most people are, as I mentioned before, socially aware or socially obsessed to the degree that they can't actually venture an opinion. I mean, I know people who are rich, they are popular, they are well situated in life, they've got a career, they've got a family, and they are shit scared to say a third of the things, a tenth of the things that you say. So where does this confidence come from?
I think hardship really got the most of it. I'm never the type to really admit it. You know, I was always the guy to always just keep my upbringing and stuff like that as second nature or as private, because I was never the type to really put the blame on other things for my shortcomings or my gifts. But, you know, what you realize is you get a whole lot of confidence when you start taking naps for dinner as a kid. So you ever had taken a nap for dinner, man? That's that's crazy.
So you didn't have everything.
No, no. I'd be lying if I said I did. That would have been cool, though.
Okay. But how tough was it? Because I appreciate, by the way, the fact that you are a private individual and you don't feel you have to suddenly do an Oprah Winfrey show here and spill out your...
I don't need struggle cred, man.
Yeah, sure. But I do think that there are levels of suffering that have been elevated to the ridiculous in South Africa, and there are people who are genuinely suffering who are ignored because their story doesn't fit people's narratives. So what kind of – I mean, sketch a very basic scenario of what you didn't have or what you did have as a kid and how it got you to where you are.
Yeah. So just before I get to that, one thing I can tell you is someone who's really been through hardship barely ever gets to share it. Right? It's usually these guys who've been barely through anything who will come up with this great story, right? Like the whole Mandela thing, right? The whole Robben Island situation.
Sure.
But if I were to sum it up to like a few words, it would probably be barely anything in the fridge, constantly on the move, because mom and dad can't pay the rent and we didn't have any property. So, you know, luckily not changing any schools, because the school I went to was a Catholic school. It was a very small Catholic school, so you didn't really need to pay anything if you wanted to be in there. You just had to be a Catholic kid who was willing to do his catechism. And it was getting good marks. You know, we can call that indoctrination in another day, but yeah.
And clearly you were smart. I mean, clearly you are smart. And obviously that gave you something to build on.
Because when you're a problem,
when you say you're a problem, like there are the gifted kids, the smart kids, the really, really curious kids are always the ones who also cause trouble. But it gives you something. It's like you realize, okay, I'm good at this. I could build on that, even if everything else falls apart. Kind of what happened with you?
Yeah, you know, I used to get a lot of heat in class because I just asked so many questions, man. Even the unnecessary ones. It would be something as simple as just a science lesson. And I'd asked why this theory was this way and why this dude didn't just wake up in the morning and decided to be that way. And the other students would get pissed off because we're trying to finish this topic because the exam is tomorrow. You know, and then this guy is asking these unnecessary questions, you know. It's unnecessary because it doesn't get you anywhere in society. That's how it all starts. Right? That's how people don't ask questions or speak out anymore late in life, because they are taught in the classroom that there's necessary questions and then there's unnecessary questions. But I was fortunate enough to have a teacher who told me there is no such thing as an unnecessary question. The very mere fact that there is a question is evidence that it's something of importance. So I was always the kid just asking about everything. And that's really what pushed me to go into the political sector. Because if life is as simple as some of these great philosophers says, then why is it so complicated for, you know, majority of our nation? And it just really went all the way from there.
It shouldn't be. And again, your first principles, intuition, which you had with the science teacher when you were asking, why do we have this theory? Where does it come from? that first principles thing is unfortunately seldom a subject for people in most political analysis and discourse to ever actually interrogate. They're very happy to just accept the broad wisdom. You know, here's the good guy, here's the bad guy.
Correct, yeah.
This is how you should vote. Like the headline stuff, yeah. The stuff that you see on X that can be, you know, fitted into, yeah. You know, maybe a small paragraph at most.
Yeah.
But don't you dare dive deeper than that and ask questions sure, about why or how did that happen or who was involved or – because for most people, it's just too much information.
That was it for me, man. Like, and believe it or not, I was also supposed to be just another pawn in the game. I was supposed to also be an ANC baby who sang
Kill the Bulls.
What do
you mean supposed to be?
So my upbringing, I grew up in a very, very ANC-like household.
Were your parents political?
Not at all. They definitely weren't afraid to share their political views.
Okay.
But political, I wouldn't say. You know, they were business people, and in business, you usually don't go that way.
Right.
But, you know, nonetheless, we weren't afraid to really share our political views when the time was right.
And they encouraged you to?
For sure. For sure. They always encouraged
even
me.
Even when you disagree?
Yeah. Yeah. we debate all the time at the dinner table, okay. You know. When we could have dinner, it was always, you know, why do you think so? There were never those really dictative parents, and I'll appreciate that forever. I was also supposed to be just another dude who went to school and got his job and voted for the ANC every 4 years and never questioned the corruption or why there were piles of trash on the other side of the road or why there were more homeless people popping up out of nowhere or more drug addicts as kids, you know, and my science teacher kind of made me snap out of it. You know, like someone waking you up in the Matrix when Neo finally got out of that tube.
Mm-hmm.
It felt, that movie scene felt unreal, but it felt so relatable to me because here's someone who told me, hey, you know, you do understand not everything is as it seems, right? You know, your president isn't as happy clappy as he likes to portray himself as. And me being an eighth grader kid, you can imagine me being a kid going, what? Wait, so you're telling me the things he promises us on TV actually don't happen? That's crazy. You know, and it just went on from there. And that's when you could say I really started taking the opposite direction in life. I could have also benefited from BEE. I could have also been a comrade and you have never seen me again. I could have signed up for their program and then they'd also have given me a Muslim light-skinned woman who nobody's ever talked to, nobody's ever interviewed her, and she's always following me because they got to get their dirty work on me. But I didn't. I didn't do any of that. And the path I took was seen as this anti-Christ path, especially in the communities I grew up in.
Sure. You're because, a traitor, right?
Man, yeah.
Some of the
no
people
idea.
Will call you all kinds of names.
All the things. They're like, oh, look at him. He thinks he's better than all of us now because he's on GC's show. Right. And or no, he sold out to the white people. Apparently that exists. You know, they come up with all these theories.
The white people are putting
money.
Of course. They're putting money in your account now.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's definitely their fault you were fired. It's their fault your roads are dirty. It's also their fault your bathrooms are out of order now.
So this falling out of love with the ANC, because in some ways I do think that you're an advanced and evolved version of this, maybe at a speed that's faster than most people. But a lot of people in South Africa are waking up to the fact that they've been lied to, that they've had the wool pulled over their eyes.
Yeah.
And it is encouraging to me that so many people are going back to first principles, thinking for themselves, making up their own minds, not buying the narrative on everything, not just the ANC, but on all other parties too, because they all have their problems. Mm. So much of what happens in South Africa is people just accepting other people's opinions, footstoots, and just buying it wholesale and saying, this is what I'm going to believe. Because it's easier to take it off the shelf if someone else has made it and use it rather than make it yourself.
Yeah.
But you're obviously not like that. You interrogate all these things to the degree that you do. And as I said earlier, you're okay with being unpopular about some of it.
For sure.
What kind of feedback do you get from, first of all, your friends, second of all, other political commentators and analysts, and third of all, the people who whose opinion you respect. What do you get from those three groups?
Well, if a friend starts not being your friend because of your political views, were they ever a friend?
No.
You know, you see what I mean? No. So, you know, luckily for me, it was never like that. They were like, huh, I didn't know you thought that way. That's pretty cool, man. You got like 10K subs yesterday.
I saw such a funny clip the other day.
Yeah.
Somebody was on a talk show.
Yeah.
And it was these two girls and they were talking to, I think it was Megyn Kelly and someone else.
Yeah.
And this woman who was being interviewed, whose name I cannot remember, Megyn Kelly says to her, oh, and she said she won't be your friend anymore since you said this about Donald Trump or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's way worse in Hollywood than it is in South Africa.
Man.
And this girl was like, okay, well, I guess we weren't friends to start with, just to prove your point. And they both laughed about it. But obviously that other person is, I stood for my principles and politics is more important than friendship. What a horrible what a horrible life you must have if you believe politics is more important than friendship.
Yeah.
Then you are a sad, unmoored, untethered, atomized individual who there's no way to make people like that happy.
She probably the type of people that believe there's a spaceship under Antarctica too.
Or Nazis on the other side of the moon.
Politics more important than friendship. Wow.
Yeah, she actually believes that.
That's crazy.
Sure.
What's next? Jeff Bezos is a lizard.
All right, so the friends, that's an easy one for you to answer there, and you don't mess around. You get straight to the answer. The second one is other political commentators, people in the intelligentsia, academics, people who may criticize you or agree with you.
Mm.
Do you care about their opinion?
No, not at all. You know, when you get into YouTube and all these things, the last thing you need to care about is people's feelings. And what you notice about all these successful individuals, they barely care.
Yeah.
You know, and my mom used to say, how do you do this? You just don't care. And I used to say, well, mom, who's your favorite celebrity when you were my age? She said, well, I always liked Mr. T.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, don't you think Mr. T had haters? She's like, for sure. Everybody's got haters. And I'm like, so think about someone as big as Mr. T. Think about the fan base he had.
I pitied a fool.
Yeah, exactly. Now think about the actual fools who didn't like him.
Right.
Much bigger than the people who don't like me. Right. I'm just a dude with about 60K subscribers on YouTube. I can't even be mentioned in the same breath as that guy. And yet he didn't seem fazed by any of it.
Right.
So if someone like him didn't seem fazed by it, why should I be? And that's the thing about being successful. You can't be putting yourself in a position where you're like, oh, what if I try this business idea? My friends are going to think I'm cringe.
Right.
Well, then you might as well just stay in the same position you're in your entire life. You know, if you must have an awful lot of money if you're going to start caring about what people think. Yeah, they must be.
And the third group of people, are there people whose opinion you would like to hear and that you're interested in and that you'd like to think highly of you?
I'm always the type to hear from everyone. You know, I always love hearing someone's point of view. So it's always an honor for me to have someone think highly of me. Would I like it? For sure.
Mm.
But is it that stage where I'm like, no, they have to think highly of me? No, not at all. I started this knowing very well I was going to be the villain of many people's stories. Yeah, I got into this knowing I was going to be the bad guy. So I was more than prepared for it. I didn't come in here not knowing what it was going to be like. The entertainment industry can be very cruel.
Yeah.
We were raised to believe you must always do your best to be kind to everyone. But time and time again, the industry has proven to us
the opposite
by showing many examples that, you know, they can make you the villain, even if you didn't want to be.
Are politicians themselves starting to take notice? I know that you've done a couple of interviews. You moderated a panel here for us the other day on the Truth Report between two Afrikaners. I mean, it's so great that you have as the objective facilitator in this conversation between Kali Kriel and Willem Petzer.
Yeah, that
you
was
got
hard.
Summer
yeah.
Sambit sitting in center stage position. Yeah, that was I love awesome. It because it's yeah.
Thanks,
it's bound to be for people who can't think outside of the box. It's bound to be a little bit of a mind fuck, right? They watch this and they're like, how's this going to happen?
Yeah.
So are the politicians starting to notice?
Yeah, you know, surprisingly, a lot of these big names are noticing young people are caring now. Right. So when I appeared on a show called States of the Nation,
mm-hmm.
the host of that show, Mike Sham, said, what I've noticed is what you did, Summer, when you started making content, you kind of made an avalanche effect, but a good avalanche effect, because now what you've done is you've improved the confidence of other youthful people,
yep.
you know, even from your community. And they started speaking out and politics became cool again. Right. It's cool now for a young person to talk about politics, even if it makes no sense. But, you know, because you do get some of the ones that just take the shortcuts because they want the bacon.
But we'll get into this in a second.
Sure.
There is a lot of apathy.
Yeah.
I mean, young people, record low turnout in the last election. Most young people in South Africa disaffected by politics. They look at it and they go, well, doesn't really affect me on a day-to-day basis. I mean, they might be right, they might be wrong. But they're more interested in other things than
for
in
sure.
politics. So,
for sure.
So do you feel like you're sometimes battling against the tide to get young people interested in this stuff? And what do you think the key is to bringing them back in?
Well, I wouldn't lie to you. I'd be lying to you if I said, you know, it didn't feel like I was battling some invisible fight, because, you know, young people are raised to think, yeah, you don't get to talk about politics until you're 55 and have experience in this job. And so when I started doing it, they said, huh, we can do it too. Well, let's give it a shot. So, you know, Donald Trump the other day was streaming with the live streamer of my generation, something that was never seen before. The president, at the time, he was still campaigning, but he was streaming with Aiden Ross. And, you know, Aiden Ross fans were shocked and they were like, wow, Trump must really be a cool guy. Let me see what he's about. You know, let me try and vote. That's how you reach out to young people. And Trump saw that. Barron Trump is the one who told him to start going to all these masculine podcasts, because that's how you get a younger audience. So I started doing the same thing. If you really want people of your generation to be as interested in the stuff as you are, then you need to show them that there's nothing to be afraid of. And you definitely shouldn't be afraid of voicing your opinion, you know, no matter who doesn't agree with it. So I also started, you know, streaming and talking about these points of views. I'd give my cultural commentary and social commentary, then add some political commentary, and they'd be like, huh, well, that's interesting. Well, then, Summer, what do you think of this? And through small things like that, I'd be winning the fight. You'd be getting more young people interested in a sector they were taught to not talk about because of where they're.
Well, I mean, I watch a lot of your stuff because for me, it also helps to summarize, because there's a lot of news and we can't all pay attention to every part of the Madlanga Commission, for example.
Yeah.
But I know you are, and I know that you'll give me the hot takes that I can then, again, ready-made, off the shelf, I can go and use those to formulate my own opinion later. If I find that you have lied to me or whatever, and it may happen, who knows, it hasn't yet.
For sure,
If I find that
I wouldn't
you
tell
have,
you that, though.
It would ruin the experience, and then I'd have to go and find someone else I could use for this stuff. But is it a lot of work? Is it a lot of preparation? Or do you just find South Africa such a rich environment for stuff to talk about that you don't even have to stress about this stuff? You just have to make sure you're reasonably well informed. You think about it and then you press record. How does it work?
So, you know, there's always drama in South Africa. So that thing of someone coming to me and saying, Sam, what should I start making content? I'm like, man, there's way too much. You can make content about anything, from the poisoned quotas down the corner to the money found in Cyril's couch the other day. You could make content about anything. Now, the challenge is to be well informed about it, because you can talk about something, but remember, you're talking about it in front of 10,000 people who've never met you before. So they're counting on your legitimacy, because you might have been the first video they came across today. So now it's your responsibility to be well informed and seem opinionated if you're that type of person. What you think. And it's also your duty to ask them what they think, because at the end, you want a meaningful discussion. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've always been doing.
So let's get into a few of the things that you think, because you said you released a Cyril video this week, and you just said this guy, this guy just doesn't care.
Yeah,
right. He just doesn't care. Doesn't give a shit about us. He's not worried about us. He's got a different set of priorities to us. Yeah. Let's start with the president, because he's the head of the fish, and they say it rots from the head. So this guy had the hopes and dreams of many people projected onto him at the beginning. We'd come out of the Zuma era, and Jacob Zuma was the villain, and it was easy to scapegoat him and send him to Nkandla, and then, you know, for a little jail stint. And then we could all pack our sins onto him, and then it would all be better.
Yeah.
And I think Cyril was maybe the one who believed that the most.
Yeah.
Then he comes in, and everybody's like, pray for Cyril. Do you remember that shit?
Yeah.
And then COVID comes along, and people are like, we've got to pray even harder for Cyril.
Yeah.
And he squanders all of this capital. He wastes every bit of it. And he's been a tremendous disappointment, because I almost find myself going, I'd rather have Getlitlikisa back.
Yeah.
You think I'm alone?
No, not at all. I'm with you right there. This is genius. It's genius how Cyril convinced people that he's still the better guy after all this time. It's because we villainized Zuma so much in our heads. When Cyril came, he was this hero. And because he had to be this hero, because we had nowhere else to turn to, we've painted this picture where everything wrong he does is just a small obstacle he just has to go through to get to the bigger goal in the end. You know, believe it or not, there's still South Africans who believe in this day and age, in 2025, that Cyril can still do it.
He's playing 4D chess.
Yeah, you see, he's
got some master plan.
And I said that the other day. Y'all think he's still just playing 4D chess, and he'd probably tell you that too.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I had Ankole Kettle and just entered office, I wouldn't care either.
No, but he's got so much. So there's always been the argument that, you know, politicians, in order to be great politicians, public servants, they need to have made their money before. That was always the argument. People are like, if you're a rich person and you go into politics, you have purer motives.
Right.
Well, that's not
true. Of
course. That's not true at all. As we've seen from his, I don't know if it's his wife, former wife's nephew, who knows, but this relative of his who we were talking about the Lamborghinis earlier.
Oh, his nephew,
And the mansion.
Yeah.
And there are all kinds of people connected to him. And why would we believe that his connections would be any better than Jacob Zuma's connections?
Yeah. I mean, they both used to steal. But the thing with Zuma is he'd steal and then give some back. You get what I mean? Like, he'd still steal a lot, you know. And
but also, you knew what you were dealing with.
You see.
He was like an honest thief.
Exactly.
He was like, I'm gonna steal your shit.
You see?
With and Cyril, it's like, I would never steal your shit.
And it's a lot more than the guy who actually admits he steals. You know, a lot of these locals where I grew up, so this was around the West Rand, Roodepoort area, they used to apply for social development funds to start their own things, you know. There was this one person in the neighborhood who started this institution that would supply the poor girls with sanitary pads. Okay. And it was the ANC that gave him that contract.
Right.
And shockingly, when Cyril came into office and the whole COVID thing came, it was all wiped out.
Yeah.
And now we're getting these stories of deep corruption in social development and all these assassinations happening to people like Mpho Malofe and Babita Deokoran. Funny how it all happened in Zuma.
What happened with this Brown Mohotsi guy? What is that story? Because he faked his own assassination?
Apparently. That's what we're getting right now. At first, I was on the guy's side, because it did seem like he was cooperating with law enforcement. He was willing to rat everyone out, because just like any criminal who's deep in the mafia world, you realize when you're caught, nobody's going to back you up.
Mm-hmm.
These guys at some point were untouchable. Cat Matlala realized the moment he was in that cell, nobody was rooting for him.
Yep.
There was a stage this man thought he'd never smell a jail cell. Mm-hmm. He'd never smell that rotten sink. But now he does, and he's realized, okay, bugger, I've been paying these people with R1 million worth a month, and they still don't cover for me. I'm going to start snitching. And then the two-hour recording comes out. The same thing with Brown Mohotsi. He's realized they're onto him, and nobody's rooting for him. There's no 20 missed calls from Peggy Kelly saying, hey, man, they're coming to your house tonight. You got to get out of there. No, none of that. They just came, and they started questioning him. So Now, he's reached that stage where he's realized, okay, now I need to start facing the fish, or the piranhas will come at me. And he was almost taken out for it, allegedly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he was just driving the other day, but according to a witness, the man pulls up in some very old Chevrolet, funny for a mafia boss, and he comes out of it, takes his gun out, and starts shooting at the car. You'd think this man didn't take his medical supplements for the afternoon. And then after he shoots the car, he gets in another one, and then he drives away.
And it was a rental car or something? Yeah,
the story goes even deeper.
It's so fishy.
All fishy. Not an ounce of blood.
I want to get through a few of these things before we have to wrap up the show. But what do you think of Gwanazi and the fact that there are so many people who are pinning their hopes on him, that he's going to help clean up the police? And I mean, I don't think there's any Jesus in politics, right? So there's no one who's pure and decent and good. But it does seem to me like this guy is one of the better ones, and we would be well placed to put more trust in him and less in the likes of Senzo Mkunu.
Yeah, and for others, sure. Yeah. Right? I mean, I used to say this all the time. People don't actually think about this. I used to say you need to sit down one day, no internet, no phone, and think about this. If Mkhwanazi didn't do that viral briefing, you wouldn't have known what was going on.
And look how bad it is.
You see, if it wasn't for that viral briefing, you genuinely wouldn't have known that there was a mafia boss in Sandhurst. No. Senzo Mkunu, Pekicele Matlala. Nobody even knew who that was. You wouldn't know about this rabbit hole and all these political assassinations and the DJ somebody thing if it wasn't for Mkhwanazi saying, hey guys, there's drug cartels that have infiltrated our South African politics. So just go check that out real quick. We wouldn't have known that.
I hear so many good stories about him. I heard just this week about how he said to his officers in KwaZulu-Natal, he said to them, if I catch any of you taking a bribe, you're finished. If anyone offers you a bribe, you lock them in jail immediately.
Isn't that how it's supposed to be?
You would think, but in South Africa, that is the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true. We've reached that stage now where you're seen as this Moses, if you just call out corruption. People see me as this Elijah when I started, you know, talking about these political matters online. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? I didn't even give y'all a solution. I just said, this is happening. And everyone was like, yeah, but it's so brave of you. How did you do that?
Because you have eyes and you have a mouth.
Exactly. I remember yesterday I was talking on the Brown Mokgotsi situation and they were like, Sama must be some kind of genius. How did you know about this? I'm like, guys, as I'm making this video, I'm watching SABC, the live stream of the Matlanga Commission. You could do the same thing, you know, if you just cared. And that's the thing about South Africans. We've developed this messiah syndrome since Mandela. So no one wants to take accountability for their own actions anymore. Everyone just wants someone to come and do it for them. So when someone like me comes out and calls things out online, I have to run for president all of a sudden.
Yeah. That's always what happens. The minute you say something that they're not brave enough to say, oh, Summer, you've got to run for president.
You see, they want
that's
to use
that's their solution
you,
to everything. They want you to be their Jesus.
You see, they want to use you to address what they are too afraid to address.
Correct.
So they want you to take things out of their chest.
Yep.
And that's not how things are supposed to work. Right? We're supposed to work together to build a better South Africa. You can't expect the one guy to fix everything. That's what got us in this mess. I mean, you could literally argue that.
What is the most exciting part of politics in South Africa? And then we'll get into some international stuff in a short while. I have found myself falling slightly out of love with politics in South Africa because I do think so much of it is pedestrian. So much of it is about the personalities rather than the actual policies. And maybe I'm just getting old and boring. I mean, I'm happy to eventually be called old and boring. What is the exciting stuff for you?
I'm a troll, man. So when I can do something that gets people to hate me, it just feels so good. You know, and I realize politics is the quickest way to that. If you just say Malema's a racist, you already have an entire group of black people that want your throat slit the moment they see you. So you're doing something right. But, you know, seriously, I think the most exciting thing about all this is that mere feeling that you are contributing to the better of the nation by helping with calling out the problems and coming up with solutions, there's no feeling that can replace that. You know, that's why entrepreneurs exist. There's a problem in society, and an entrepreneur wants to find an alternative solution
right.
to that problem, or just wants to better a situation. Doesn't yep. necessarily have to be bad. So, you know, that mere feeling of calling out a problem, talking about it, and coming up with a solution, which is what, you know, this entire thing is, if you sum it all down, then that's amazing, you know, and collaborating with people with the same mindset, you know, me coming on this great show that's been there for quite some time now, talking about, you know, the same problems and coming up with solutions to better the nation.
Well, you have, I mean, I think you've just from the videos I've seen, you've come up with some really interesting solutions, takes, analysis. And I really think it's valuable when someone has a point of view, but they've also got the facts and they've thought about it a little bit, and they've really closed all the doors down the passage so that the door that you end up walking through is the one they always wanted you to walk through. It's a fun way of looking at politics, and I think you do it damn well.
Thanks, man.
Internationally, do you have any strong feelings? Obviously, you're watching what's going on in Europe, in America, and Argentina, and Mexico, India, China.
Yeah.
What for you is the main area of interest?
I think this week specifically, if we really want to be recent, I really commend Trump for calling out the atrocities that have been going on in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Their genocide has been ignored for a very long time. And I thought it was absolutely unfair that, you know, there would be other atrocities, smaller atrocities rather, in the world that would be called out. And then you had this entire group of West Africans who were being slaughtered like cattle, you know, because of all these extremist groups that believe it is their religion to wipe these people out because they're infidels. And I really praised him for that. I'm yet to make a video on that, you know. They truly is, you know, a massive genocide in Nigeria. It's terrible.
Well, also in Sudan, that continues to be a massive disaster. And it's just not, somehow it does not get the attention that Gaza gets. Or
not at all.
That Ukraine gets.
Nope.
There are some subjects that it seems even the people who are, they're trying to convince us that they're the most compassionate and empathetic people in the world.
Right.
But they don't give a shit about Nigeria or Sudan.
No. They don't.
You can't get them to even point to it on a map,
no,
let alone care.
Now, remember, Africa was always that type of continent where if there was a commercial made for us by the World Health Organization, there would always have to be
starving
a skinny
child.
Kid. There
yeah,
we go.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Africa. Right. Right? There's no war in Africa. Everybody's too hungry.
Bob Geldof going, do they
you see?
Know it's
yeah,
Christmas
yeah. Always
time.
Always the white young lady with the ranger hat
yeah.
going to feed all the hungry kids
yeah,
over there.
Yeah, handing out food
yeah,
passes.
And then water starts coming from one well and all yeah. the kids start dancing
and
around.
And the ANC guys that open
you see?
It. Yeah.
That's Africa.
Look, I'm opening
yeah.
the tap.
Yeah.
In fact, Cyril did that a while ago. It was,
wow.
it was very, very funny.
You don't say.
What is your take on, and obviously this week there's a lot of news around the G20 and Joburg.
Yeah.
I don't know if the roads in your area have been improved at all. Potholes filled,
yeah.
traffic lights repaired.
Well, I can't say we filled them with tar, but we filled them with something that can definitely get the cars to move smoothly from now on.
What do you think of Trump's comment about how South Africa shouldn't be in the G's?
I think he said it too late. He should have said that like 3 years ago. Why are we in the G's? We talk about being this pro-capitalist nation that wants the better for everyone. Then we have the farmer murders. We have the land expropriation. Mm-hmm. We've got the GBV. Is
and
that what
got,
a first
country? We've got a government that is basically still in love with socialist ideas.
Exactly.
Which
and
have been experimented with and have failed everywhere they've tried, but they want to do it again.
And you know what, Gareth? We just love to criticize the actual first world countries. We took Israel to the ICJ the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Israel recently.
Oh, yeah?
And you won't believe it. The way Israel is portrayed on mainstream media news, you'll always have a BBC journalist with a bulletproof vest talking like she's about to duck a missile, right?
Yeah,
or giving I went to Tel Aviv and I was expecting the very same thing. Took us to a nice
hotel.
What,
you didn't bump into Christiane Amanpour?
No. I really wanted to bump into Greta Thunberg, but the time
oh, yeah.
I arrived there, she had
no,
already left.
You were a bit early or she was late or
see,
whatever.
And some people mistaken me for Mandla Mandela. I said, what? No. I don't come here in a boat.
A shitty boat.
Dude.
Stinking boat filled with
activists. I thought we're the ones who hate all the illegal immigrants, but we come just like them. You know.
So, before we get into the politics of it, what did you think of Israel? What surprised you? What are the people like? What's the situation there? Because up to a little while ago, it was still an active war zone.
Very much so.
You know, despite the fact that you may not have had missiles falling on you.
Definitely. You know, the news told us it was a war zone, and we were told to believe that it was happening everywhere. But you'll be shocked to find out there have been areas that have been untouched. You know, there is still places that have still been kept clean. Some hostages are still taken, yes. You know, Hamas is still on the loose and all of that's still happening. Mm. But I really respect how they've managed to stabilize things. When I was there, you could walk, or I was just walking around on the beach at 3 a.m. Don't ask why. I was walking around on the beach at 3 a.m. You know, you saw these, you know, the hot young females walking around. Yeah,
sure.
All the guys that look like models playing volleyball over there. 3 a.m. Old couples walking around. You can never do that in Johannesburg.
Hell no.
And that's where we're having the G20 summit. That says a lot, you know. And I looked at all this happening and I was like, wow. Because you won't believe it. The concept they follow there is, why would you want to commit a crime against your own people? Right? They have this strong sense of community. Why would you steal from your neighbor? Why would you steal from your own blood? Right? Instead of hiring them. When you go to the restaurants, there's barely any unemployment in the state of Israel, because when you go to these restaurants, for example, or these shoemaking stores, the people that work there is people of my generation. You'll have the young people. And then the older generation, like yourself or herself, they're the ones who really run the things. Okay. So it's like a generational thing, right? They're giving them the tools and they're really putting in the effort and making the effort to try and be their best. It's like a lovely connected situation where everyone is looking out for each other. You know, even in the Hamas attacks, you know, everyone knew someone whose house they could go to for protection. And you just see the sense of community. When I was walking the other day, there was this one Hebrew guy and he was like, hey, you're from South Africa, right?
Oh, wow.
Because I think I had something that had the South African flag on. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I know. Your country doesn't really like us, huh? I'm like, yeah, but don't worry. I'm not here to improve any of that. I'm just here to see what's going on and give my own opinion. He's like, yeah, please enjoy. And you'd just be walking around and everyone would be like, hey, hi, welcome to Israel. Oh, thank you. You know, it's a very sweet sense of community. We went to all the organic farms. Remember, Gareth, these people came to a deserted land.
Yeah, you couldn't grow shit there.
And somehow managed to come up with some of the most advanced growing technology systems in the world today. That's what happens when you come together and you realize no one's coming to save you, and you realize you're doing this not only for you, but for your children as well. You know, that's what made the state of Israel such a proud state that is willing to defend themselves at any situation. And I got to see both sides of the story. I interviewed the ambassadors. I even interviewed the local Arab teacher walking down the street, you know, and what she thought and what the other side thought. And in the end, what I came up with is, despite what's happening, this is still a very safe country that cares very much for its people. So the difference between Israel and South Africa, you can see it. The roads are clean. The government actually gives a sandwich about their people. Here, not so much, right? Here, they just care if there's money to be laundered in Tembisa Hospital. But that side, their public hospitals are some of the best in the world. You'd think it's a private hospital. All the doctors so happy to see you all smiling. This side, they look exhausted because they just had 100 people admitted before you. There's just that huge difference. And that's what I really saw when I went there. You know, a bitter nation wants you to believe the enemy nation is worse than they are. South Africa and the ANC are very good at using emotional blackmail. Oh, you think we're bad? You should check out Israel.
Yeah.
Okay, I will check out Israel. We went there, and it was better than what was going on here. They are the ones with the war, but we're the ones with worse murder rates. Explain that to a kid. They're the ones with the war, but there's more people dying here. Mm. More women dying a week here than the amount of women that were killed in the Hamas attacks there. Yeah. So who's the worst nation again? Oh, is it Israel? Okay. Why? Because the news says it. All right. You know, and I took down a lot of notes on it. A lot of content is yet to be made. I didn't even touch foot in Johannesburg again, and there were already people making videos about how, you see, I knew Summer Sambit was a Mossad agent. In case you didn't know it, Summer's actually a Hebrew name. Dude, it's crazy. But it's kind of fun at the same time. You know, it's,
dude, I love what you're doing. I think it's really powerful. You are you're blazing a trail. Your Thanks, content man. Is great. If you want to get a really hot take on what's going on in the news, follow this man. He will fill your day with lots of laughter and plenty of information, and it is worth paying attention to him. Also, he is on the Truth Report, which you can find on social media. They just went over 100,000 subscribers this week, which is very, very good news. No doubt you'll be there soon as well in your own capacity.
For sure.
Which is terrific. And Summer, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you to Sibu Cortella and to Ben and to Leanne and to Hanan and to you, most especially to you. And we will see you next Friday. Have an awesome weekend, everybody. Ciao.